Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We'll routine to call a scene to put work in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're all so mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Ma'am, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Awing awet, awing awet, awing awet, awing awet, awing awet, awing awet.
nothing happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Tracks deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, children, what's that sound?
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. From the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. And we can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. So far, I've been joined by the Honorable Knight Thomas there. And I think about starting off the day with, they call it being awake, you know. Let me tell you a little story. Back in, I think it was 1998, during the old Clinton impeachment trials, I started listening in on a lot of news and radio, and found that the most information that I could relate to came off of AM radio, and then I started hearing guys like Sean Hannity and, I can't remember half of the names that I used to listen to. There were other people out there. Alex Jones was one of them that was on this one particular AM station. I used to skip back and forth between all these different AM stations to hear what was going on in the news. And as time passed, and the more I got to listening in to things and hearing things that were going on and out there in the world, and, you know, corruption in the government and such, and kind of really got into doing a whole lot of research. So for a point there, I got so deep into research that I went down a rabbit hole of epic proportions. I mean, I had stacks and stacks of stuff printed out. Everything from the Illuminati to the Freemasons to every conspiracy theory under the sun that you've heard out here on the internet and on the radio and so on and so forth. It was just a mind-boggling journey of actually weeding through the what we call the Matrix, you know, like the movie, you know, when the guy said something about taking the red or the blue pill, you know, one of them puts you back to sleep and the other one will show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Well, looking back in retrospect, I'm beginning to feel like that one particular guy in the movie The Matrix who wanted to just go back to sleep and not know anything, you know. It's just so much going on in the world. You know, from my book, there's a part in Revelations where it talks about wars and rumors of wars, plagues, famine, pestilence, and all this kind of stuff. And then to top it all off, you got all the different conspiracy theories and all the doomsday theories and everything under the sun. Well, as time progressed, the more I got to researching everything that was out there, I went into full combat mode. I mean, I was just completely paranoid, thinking the world was coming to get me and my family, and didn't know what to do about it. All I knew is that I had to get prepared for something. And so I started trying to prepare my family and move my family out there into the country and keep us out of the cities, because you know, that's way back.
Speaker, there it is.
Hey, That was way back before the whole Y2K thing, which was another pile on there. And, of course, you know, I sat down one time and I wrote a letter to Bill Clinton and actually got a response back from him. I wrote a letter to George Bush Jr., got a letter back from him. And then even all the way up to the present day, I wrote an email to old Obama out there. And, of course, I got an email back, probably from one of their secretaries or whatever. It's neither here nor there, but I've been proactive ever since way back in 1998 trying to figure out what was going on in the government, you know, whether or not it was true what they said, whether the world was as bad as they say. And looking out into the world even today, you can't get on the news without hearing something negative. You can't get on the alternative media without hearing something negative. It's a continuous bombardment of information. There's so much information to weed through to find out what's truth and what's not truth. And so, like I said, I start feeling like that guy that was in the Matrix who said, you know, I don't even care if the steak isn't real, it tastes good, I just want to go back to sleep, I never want to know anything, you know. So for those folks out there who are awake, so to speak, I feel for you, because I understand what it's like to have knowledge that you're trying to make the world a better place, and you just don't know exactly how you're going to be able to accomplish that, because it's an overwhelming task. There's videos coming out all the time about people being beheaded by this group called ISIS, and you know, Obama calls them ISIL, and there's a reason behind all that, but there's so much. It's a big old mess. You know, we don't know for real what's going on anywhere at any given time, unless you're in the general vicinity when something's actually occurring and they're showing it on the news and you're there right there on the spot. You can't determine whether or not they're faking it or not. I put a video out way back in 2011, I believe it was, that one of them was called Warning to the World and one was called Bombshell. And, of course, they're not that very, very good of videos, but they did have some important information to it. And it was regarding the switch from analog TV to digital TV. Because with analog TV, once it goes out over the air, there's really nothing you can do to it. But as far as digital TV, now there's a difference, because you can delay digital TV. You can also manipulate the video on digital TV. And if you watch the news, you can find out... If you get used to knowing what blue screen and green screen looks like, you can find out that some of these newscasts that they're putting out there are just flat out fake. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Anybody with common sense can look at this thing and say, you know, that's a blue screen or green screen that's going on. You know, when they zoom in on the guy and the leaves in the background get big, but the guy stays the same size, there's something wrong with that picture there. Or you see the same car looping around in the background, you know, or one second there ain't no people walking around and they take a little slightly different camera angle. Now you got a whole bunch of people walking in the background and cars going by it. These are like bloopers that, whether they do them intentional or not, if you pay attention, if you're awake and you're watching, you'll notice these anomalies. So what's real and what isn't real? I know that there's this campaign out there for people burning ISIS flags out there because they want to show the world that even though they may be Muslim, that they're not involved in this and they don't want a part of it. They don't want to get bombed over this deal. The same thing occurred back in after 9/11 happened, that the Muslim community put out a video. I can't remember what the name of it. Obsession, that's what the name of it was. Go up and Google up the video called Obsession and go back and watch what they said in that video, and you'll see a lot of things correlating with things that happen now. They put this video out as a peaceful side of the Muslim community in order to tell the world, hey, you know, we're not part of this, you know, we're peaceful. And so, you know, regardless of what you think about their religious views or what's going on over there, or whether they should stand up and fight against the bad guys or what, it's still information out there that needs to be weeded through. Are they indeed peaceful? We could sit around and debate that. Are they not? You know, who's to say? With this information age that we've got going on right now, you know, being awake comes with a huge responsibility for far as making sure that whenever you pass information on that you know for a fact it is truthful, you've researched it inside and out, and the facts stand on their own two legs. You know, not just hearsay that, hey, you know, I heard there were 100 Muslims down here in America or something like that that are getting ready to attack somebody. Now everybody's in fear looking over their shoulder, and anybody who looks like they're Islamic becomes a target. You know, and I've even found myself doing this after the whole border crisis, is that I never looked upon anybody any differently, you know, in the world up until this whole border crisis started up. And then I started noticing more Hispanics than I've ever noticed before in my life. And chances are they were always there. It never was an issue, you know. But why I would start noticing them now as opposed to before, you know, it kind of disheartening to me that I would even look at somebody as if, you know, okay, you could be an outsider. You could be an illegal alien. Do you see what I'm trying to say here? It's there's a definite wave of evil going across this land. And, you know, it attacks in all different directions. So, when I say that I can relate to that guy that was in the movie The Matrix that wants to be back asleep just to not know, there's a lot of stress in knowing. You know, when I look at 9/11... To me, all the evidence points as an inside job. Sandy Hook, bogus. All the Batman shooting, bogus. All these different shootings that's been going on around in the United States, they all seem bogus to me. The facts just don't add up. This is the information that I've researched and been presented to me. Now, if somebody can go out and show me opposite facts, then I'd be more than willing to take a look at those. But from everything that I've seen, there's somebody out there definitely trying to manipulate the American people into believing that the boogeyman is around every single corner, underneath every single bed, and getting ready to pop out of every single closet. Got the entire American people fighting amongst each other racially, emotionally, mentally, politically, religiously. I mean, it's just an onslaught of somebody's out to get you, doomsday's right around the corner, you know, and somebody out there is making a hell of a lot of money off this deal, whether it be by selling guns. Go ahead, Thomas.
Right, I was going to say, to jump in there real quick, the problem with the whole thing, too, is that, I mean, there's a whole world full of 7 billion people. That means there's an awful lot of interactions going on out there. So you don't even have to, you know, fake a report on anything in order to get what you want. All you have to do is go sift through, and statistically you're almost guaranteed that whatever story you're looking for, you're going to find one somewhere out there that you can report on that's going on right this moment. You know, it's like being in New York where, you know, it's 3 a.m. and there's 3 million things to do, you know,
well,
all of them different.
That's a good valid point.
You know, here's the question that's begged. Is it that they are reporting only the stuff that is bad and never reporting the stuff that's good to brainwash people into being fearful? Or is it that they're just selling what people are buying?
You got a valid point.
If you have a news station, right, if you have a news station that shows nothing but, you know, kitties getting rescued from trees and, you know, good-natured stories and whatnot, would anybody tune into that? Would they even care, you know?
I think I would.
Or are they going to turn around and tune away and go to the shows that are showing all the horrible things that are going on in the world, you know?
I would tune into that show with the kitties getting saved because I would use that show as therapy, you know? Seriously. I would have to, like, hey, man, I've seen enough bad. I got to go see some good, you know? This is, you got to level this thing out here. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So,
but, you know, mm-hmm. It's...
Well, and on the thing about, you know, the bad versus good Muslim thing, the best, you know, best thing that I saw really that was said about that was, you know, literally, look, I don't care about the bad versus good. I'm concerned about the people shooting at me.
Yep.
Once that's handled, you know, I'm not going to even think about the other people that, you know, happen to be, you know, following the same holy book. Because, I mean, that has nothing to do with, you know, people shooting at me.
Well, we're trying.
I mean, they didn't even have guns when that book was written.
We're trying to bring, you know, peace, hope, and love to the world, man. And it's as if there's another side of the story there that they're trying to bring hate, discontent, racism, and everything negative to the world. So that's why when I say that there's a definite wave of evil running across this world, I mean, that's just the total opposite of what we're trying to accomplish, you know. I don't want to see anybody suffer out there. I would do anything I could to help anybody. But just like you, our resources are limited. You know, what can I do? I get on my Knights of the Round Table and we can sit around, we can talk about things and try to get things motivated and find solutions and act on them and do the best job we can. And that's what we do. But as far as, you know, the overwhelming task of cleaning house in the entire world, we got so many nutcases out there. And then there's another factor to add in there, is that the pharmacies or the drug companies out there in the world are pumping people full of all kinds of drugs, and these people are getting addicted to these drugs and going insane. I mean, I'm starting to wonder if the entire world isn't mentally ill, according to everything I've seen, you know.
Well, there's something that nobody is talking about right there, is that you know, they're saying that Robin Williams was depressed when he killed himself, right? But what they're not saying is that he was actually on medication, that they're finding that people who take that for depression end up with suicidal thoughts. So, you know, they don't want anybody to basically mention, oh, hey, wait a minute, those, you know, drugs that you're taking right now for, you know, feeling down and feeling the blues might very well end up causing you to feel even worse and end up just, you know, saying the heck with it and ending it all, you know.
Well, and
I mean, that's something that maybe needs to be talked about and addressed, you know.
Yeah,
just because
I agree.
Somebody's making money off it doesn't mean they get to keep shoveling it, you know.
I'm
sure the Germans were making tons of money off of all the Jews that they were killing while they were stealing their gold.
Yeah, it's...
Does that mean we should have let them keep doing it?
No, it's, you know? It's scary. It's scary that there would be actual people in this world who would look at a dollar bill as more value than a human life. I mean, they don't care. They flat out just do not care.
And there is no number you can put on a bill, a piece of money, that makes it more worthwhile than another human being's life. That bill feels nothing, and I don't care, you know. I mean, seriously, it's not... I think the problem is that we have basically lost sight of the fact that the money is just a means of making it easier to do business with people. It's not actually anything at all. There is, you know, it's just a completely... what's the term that they use there? I need the cricket sound now.
The bad thing about the whole thing you're talking about, Thomas, is that they have glamorized it. They have glamorized money so much by putting shiny things and nifty gizmos in front of everybody on the planet, and people want, and they don't understand.
And then say you got to have the dollars to get this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. While you're wanting that, you're not paying attention to where it's actually coming from. The little child that's in some third world country that's sewing up clothes, working crazy hours, you know, against their will. You know, or in other countries where corporations are literally polluting their water and their land and raping their resources and, you know, doing it for a massive profit. Man, by the time they get it made over there and get it over here, they have made so much freaking money off of this deal. It's... Why would they care about the people down there? I mean, people are a dime a dozen, according to these corporations. You can get people to work, because the harder times are, the less people will be willing to have to, you know, you can get them to work
and
for
that
less.
That is why a lot of people think that the wars that are being created most of the time that they see out there are, you know, that they're doing it basically to throw people into poverty so they can get them to do more for less.
Yeah, not to mention in the military-industrial complex, there are so many millions and billions of dollars to be made. New weapons, bullets, guns, ammunition, armor, you know, even in the...
Back up a second. Millions and billions of dollars, right? Now let's take it a step further, because it's not millions and billions, it's quite literally trillions of dollars. Where did all the trillions of dollars come from?
It came from the
people. That's what
people
have to stop and look at.
Oh, you're talking about numbers-wise. The piggy bank only holds so many dollars. I agree.
Yeah.
But either way, here you go. It's even in the...
That's the thing, though. They didn't... They were just basically an abstract thought somebody, you know, coined up to place a value, a number value, on things, on tangible things. So if we get past looking at the money and look at the tangible things, you can start to see how easy it would be to shift away from this, you know, gargantuan monstrosity that we're basically, you know, we're struggling under every day.
Yep.
It's a giant cloud of nothing. And here we are stooped over, you know, basically breaking our back trying to hold something up that has no weight to it at all.
And this whole thing bleeds right into the civilian community as well, as far as guns, ammunition, and everything like that.
Yep.
Because, you know, with all these terrorist fears and government taking away your rights and stuff like that, people are arming up. I mean, people are getting ready for war, literally. You know, and they're buying up anything that they can for self-defense or self-preservation.
And now you see that there is no civilian, there is no military. There is only the human race.
Yep.
If you arm up one group of people, I don't care what title you put on them, you arm up one group of people, the other group of people is going to arm up too.
Well, and that's why I'm saying the path that we're on as humanity, we're going down a bad path, because at some point, you know, when you got a bunch of people bucking up to each other, at some point, something's going to pop, and it's going to happen at a wrong time, and then all heck's going to break loose. You know, I'm not a doomsday or a fearmonger. I'm a realist, and a realist in me tells me that you can't keep doing what you're doing financially, mentally, or physically, or all these things that we see in modern-day society without people starting to crack. You know, whether it be your lone gunman that gets pissed off at the government, goes out and tries to shoot somebody that sparks off that war going on, you know, or the government encroaching on the farmer and stealing his cattle or whatever, there's going to be some point that's going to be the last straw that broke the camel's back. And everybody right now is armed to the teeth, and everybody is ready for anything to happen. You got people back in the woods ready for the apocalypse, and people down in the city just totally stoned out of their gourd, you know. And
I was going to say, I think that, you know, we have a different view of things, too, because we're in America. Just, you know, so anybody out there... is wondering, that's listening, Shaziz and I are both in the United States of America, and here we still have the right to bear arms, even though they've stripped most of that right away from us. You know, there's a lot of weapons that the military has that they won't allow a civilian to have, but we're still allowed to go down and buy a gun. We're still allowed to go down, and you can even buy a lot of explosives and whatnot, because farmers use it for, like, removing stumps and stuff like that.
Yep.
The
anarchist cookbook,
world,
man.
You know, what we're not seeing is they're not allowed to have this stuff. Yeah, they'll show up and they'll kick their door in if they find out they have something there that they're, oh no, not supposed to have. You know, it's like, well, it's okay for the other guys to have, you guys to have it, but we can't have it. I mean, you know, that's the biggest thing that keeps getting pointed out, is that Nazi Germany started out by disarming their people. Once they had everybody disarmed, then they could just pretty much do whatever they wanted. Once they had more power than the general populace in their concentrated effort of people that they could control, and they could weed through and pick the people that have the same mindset that they have, meaning, you know, us versus them, and, you know, we'll take what we can because now we have the power to do it, then they started their reign of terror on the rest of the world. You know?
Well, if Agenda 21 is real, And the Georgia Guidestones are real. They've already got everything in place. I mean, it's basically they've set the firecracker down, and all they're doing is waiting for somebody to light the match. That's the way I see it. I mean, I know that sounds, you know, conspiratorial or, you know, doomsday-ish, but look at everything that's in place.
Clarify what you're talking about. I think I know what you're talking about with Agenda 21. That's where they're basically talking about weeding down to just 500,000 people, and
yeah,
the elite are basically deciding who that 500,000 is going to be, and basically kill off 6.5 billion people.
Yeah,
actually more than that now, 500. Yeah, so basically they're going to kill off like almost 7 billion people.
Yeah,
so
there's supposedly documents out there. Just Google Agenda 21 if you want to go down that rabbit hole and find out what we're talking about, or the Georgia Guidestones, mm-hmm. and read what's on there. And it literally talks about, huh?
In a nutshell, what's the Georgia Guidestones about?
Well, it's essentially a couple big old giant stones that have these words on there that talks about the future of humanity, which is essentially depopulating the planet, putting everybody in certain areas to where their nature can, you'll have these big old giant nature reserves, and you just have to go read it. I mean, I can't read it for verbatim, but essentially it and Agenda 21 are identical as far as, you know, taking the population down, bringing everybody into what everybody keeps calling the New World Order, a one world government under a one world currency. And it's just, if those things are real, and I wouldn't doubt it one little bit. But if they're real, everything's in place. I mean, if you look to see what's going on politically overseas and with all the different nations and alliances being made and things where the international banks are separating Russia and what's going on in China, over in the Middle East and here in the United States, every single piece of the puzzle is right there. I mean, the bomb is set. All needs to happen is the match to be lit. And I'm hoping like heck that nobody ever lights that match. But if they do, Agenda 21 succeeds, because there's going to be so much death and destruction on this planet, it's just going to be ludicrous. And, you know, your average Joe don't want no part of this. Your average Muslim don't want no part of it. Your average Christian don't want no part of it. Your average atheist. Nobody wants to go over and bomb the crap out of the world except a lunatic, you know?
Right.
So where do you go with that?
The problem is we are a part of that, because we're in this world, and we have to, if we see something's going on, we have to do what we can to take a stand to put a stop to it. But you have to, I guess to stay sane, the one thing you have to do is you have to decide, after looking at your resources, what can you do, and only do what you can do. Don't try to struggle to do more than you can and end up running yourself into a hole or driving yourself crazy.
Well, physically I'm there, but
as long as everybody is willing to do that,
physically
it'll be solved. You don't have to do more than you're capable of in order for the world to be corrected if everybody else is doing what they're capable of.
But
if you're trying to do everybody else's job, or somebody else is trying to do your job, then that'll eventually run them into a hole, and then they're going crazy because, you know, they can't pay their bills or whatever it is that's basically, you know, becoming an issue. Or they're, you know, they're thinking about this stuff so much because they can't get to and handle stuff that other people aren't doing, that, you know, they end up in a depression, or they basically aren't getting enough sleep and can't work. And again, you know, you're back down to the not having enough, you know, not having enough resources.
And that's what I was trying to point out, that physically I'm doing everything I can possibly do, physically and financially, but mentally it is taxing, because I got a big heart and I don't want anybody to suffer, and I wish that I could go around the world and solve all the problems of the world. I wish I could be that powerful, you know, but I'm not. And the only thing I got is my words to shout out to the world and try to say, hey, you know, let's all get together and let's work this thing out. You know, I'm that guy that's saying, can't we all just get along, peace and love, you know, or break it up or something like that. But, you know,
there was that guy that introduced you, introduce you to some of his music, Dr. Steele. You know, he was basically running for world emperor, and his intent was to make fun the top priority in the world, and you know, build the entire world into a giant playland where people would stop, you know, I don't know, stop doing all the things in the adult world that basically lead to stress and strife and fighting and arguing and, you know, people killing each other.
Well, you talk a lot on here about abuse of children. And I know that's one thing that touches your heart, and you want to see that stop. You know, when you, as an adult, are arguing in front of your children, you're putting them through literal hell. And when you are thinking about, you know, just what that child is going through at that particular point in time, you actually put yourself in that child's shoes, then you might think twice before you actually argue in front of them. But we as a society are allowing our schools and our governments and our media to bombard these children with things that they shouldn't be having to deal with right now. They should be being children. They should be, you know, enjoying their childhood. But they're growing up so fast because everything that they're hearing is either got to do with death or destruction or something, you know, something negative. I mean, even in the cartoons, for Pete's sake, these cute little cartoons running around blasting each other with guns or whatever, you know? You know, or into witchcraft or whatever, you know? It's just, the whole deal is just mind-boggling. And that's why I continue to say there is a wave of evil going across this world that is just, it's mind-blowing. In my book, this is why I reference my book all the time, because I see correlations in that book. Now, whether I'm right or wrong, that's neither here nor there. Fact is, we're living in this world, and if we don't get it under control, we're going to start losing people right and left like we already are. I mean, but probably on a larger scale, unlike anything we've ever seen, because people are going to begin to crack. They're not going to be able to handle all this.
You say it right. You say get things under control. One thing I can see being kind of important that needs to be addressed is, you know, I mean, we went over and we basically did what to Saddam Hussein just because they wouldn't let him, he wouldn't let them go in and just look, rifle through his stuff and see what he was up to, right? But yet, we have a major multinational corporation called Monsanto and another one called Bayer that are specifically working with modifying organisms genetically. They're actually cracking the genome and inserting code or removing code to change these organisms, and nobody is kicking their doors in and insisting on seeing what they're doing to make sure they're not making a super virus. I mean, for all we know, this Ebola that's going around that's had such a major change so that it can actually be more prolific. Instead, I mean, up till now, we haven't had a problem with Ebola because Ebola is really hard to catch because it kills people rather quickly, and you just go, whoa, that person got sick and died. I'm not going over there and messing with that, you know, and then you don't get it, and eventually the Ebola viruses all die off because they have to have a specific climate to exist in. Well, now they're able to withstand, you know, something like another 7 to 10 days more, which the last version that was a slight issue was, you know, surviving anywhere from 3 to 21 days. Now we're looking at like 2 weeks to a month that they can survive inside a host before it finishes incubating and becomes, you know, a problem. So you've got these people that contract it and then wander off and end up God only knows where whenever it finally breaks out and then catches, you know, everybody there gets sick from it. And, you know, who's to say that Monsanto didn't do this?
Well,
they have the means. Why aren't we, you know, going in and insisting if we're going to follow this, you know, thing with the government, then, you know, let's get on their behind and say, look, get over there. I want to know everything that's going on in there. Somebody needs to go and audit Monsanto. Somebody needs to go and audit Bayer.
Well, before that's ever even going to occur, we're going to have to get to the point where we can actually put representatives in power that are actually going to do their job. But as it stands right now, there's so much corruption in the damn government, it's just nuts.
Maybe we need to stop calling it a job and go back to calling it what it actually is a duty, you know? Because a job implies a payment, a paycheck. Well, and who's paying the biggest paychecks?
When you send a senator or a congressman to the Washington, D.C. that's supposed to be going there to work for the people, by the time they get into that community of politicians or whatever you want to call them, they are either bribed, threatened, blackmailed, or bought, sold, or whatever, or done in, if they don't go in there and comply with what's going on. We literally have the equivalent of the mob running this country. And some of these individuals aren't even citizens of the country. They just have the money. And so we got international banking industries. We've got international corporations. We got money men at the very tip top of this pyramid that are making the rules and regulations while we sit down and argue over whether or not we should have gun control or rights or whatever. You know, they're running roughshod over us while we're down here distracted with all this kind of stuff, you know. I believe it's by design. You keep the people arguing over all this, you can rob them blind, and they'll never even know what hit them. It'll blame it on each other. They'll blame it on the black guy or the white guy, you know. You got it made.
I was going to say, you got people, you know, arguing over who's getting mugged in the street over a few dollars out of a wallet. Meanwhile, the bank is basically robbing everybody blind.
Yep.
I believe the phrase is, you give a man a gun, he might be able to rob somebody, rob a person.
They don't.
Or even as much as a bank, you give them a bank and they can rob the world.
Thomas, in my belief, they don't care whether you got a gun or not. They don't care whether or not there's a Second Amendment or not. The only reason for them to care whether there's a Second Amendment would be if they were planning some massive attack on all the United States or the world for that matter, and they're going to do some massive taker. That's the only reason why they'd want to disarm the country. But as it stands right now, give the Americans all the guns in the world, because you know, they're going to kill each other, you know, and you're going to make money off of it. You're going to make money whether it be via medicine or guns and ammunition, everything under the sun.
This is the issue, though, that they're not seeing, that most people that feel that they're okay with their Second Amendment, they have never been in a situation where someone with a Humvee and a howitzer or some, 50 cal rolled up on them and fire that off to see exactly what kind of destructive power that has. The stuff that they can't buy is the stuff that basically, if they show up, they have such a distinct advantage over the guy who's, you know, running around with a shotgun or even a couple of assault rifles. It just cannot compare to, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're shooting at them with stuff that basically all they have to do is keep out of sight, and whatever's not exposed is not getting hit because what they're behind will block it. Meanwhile, they're shooting back at you with something that even steel-reinforced concrete walls won't stop. In fact, if anything, they don't even have to hit you. All they have to do is hit the supports on the structure, and it'll collapse on you, and then they can just go ahead and leave because you're dead.
But even at that, at the end of the day, we have to keep our Second Amendment. Otherwise, if all hell does break loose, and it's a matter of we got pitchforks and bricks and sticks and stones to fight against a massive army, and we can't have that, you know. We need to hold that on. We need to hold on to the entire Constitution. Otherwise, you know, hey, these guys can get by with anything they want. Right now, there is some sort of debate, at least, that, you know, hey, you can't do this because the Constitution says it's not legal. But yet, you know, they find ways around it. But
that's what I'm saying, though. The Second Amendment isn't really the Second Amendment anymore.
Well,
because it was initially instituted so that there would be a standing private militia that's basically just a loose-knit group of people who are essentially, they live in a general area, so therefore they're going to defend that area automatically. There's no need to pay people to defend their home.
You
don't need to defend somebody to defend their home because it's their home. So this building an army, the only thing we ever needed an army for was to go invade other countries.
Yep, our army was supposed to be for defense only, and that's the way it should have been. And even as weak, as flimsy as the Constitution has become because of all the deterioration, because of the lack of representation that we, the people, actually have in the government, It is the only barrier standing between us and total all and all out tyranny. You go to any country out there that doesn't have the equivalence of the United States Constitution, they get run over all the time. And what do they? What can they do?
Spain and the solar tax?
Yeah. And so we're kind of like the last beacon of hope as far as I'm concerned. Once the American Constitution is gone, then I feel that their one world government will succeed, because what can you do? You don't have no rights to say anything. If you do, then you disappear, you know. And if this is the kind of evil that we're up against, I personally want to be armed for protection of my family, you know, not because I'm a violent kind of individual, but because, you know, there's a sense of fear there when it comes to somebody harming your children.
Well, I think the first line of defense is knowledge, too.
Yeah.
That's the one thing a lot of people are kind of missing. If you actually sit down and talk to a cross-section of preppers and people who are basically, you know, they're insisting on basically doing things to prepare for any kind of calamity that is going to be worldwide, they're not that concerned about their weapons. They have a few. They feel that they need a few. They definitely thought about how many they could actually use and how many are too many, so they're not wasting money on stuff that they won't be able to get used anyway. But they have moved on, and then they're working on, basically it's all about knowledge, you know, medication, having food, being able to, you know, produce food and produce water too at some point. You know, these are all things that are just, you know, bits of knowledge that if we did not have this knowledge to begin with, we wouldn't have the civilization we have now. Humanity would have died off a long time ago before the first building was ever built or the first city was ever constructed if we did not know how to go about doing these things that they're calling them crazy for learning about.
Yep, and you know? Like I said, and on that point, even with my talking about wanting to keep the Second Amendment, you know, I'm not a violent man, but I want the option to be able to defend myself if somebody shows up at my doorstep trying to harm my family, you know, whether it be government, the guise of government or whatever. I want to be able to protect my family, you know.
Well, you realize that they keystone into each other, too. You have the right to bear arms so that you can retain the right to freedom of speech.
Yep.
And peaceful assembly.
So we got Terry in here too, but I ain't heard from him. You there, Terry?
Oops.
Yeah.
Guess not.
I think he just dropped out. Oh, rats. I wanted to hear what Terry had to say about it. Maybe he'll come back on.
Hopefully he'll come back.
Anyway, you know, this whole thing, you know, with the Matrix, like I said, man, sometimes I wish that I could just be that guy in that movie that's talking about go back to sleep and not know anything. But, you know, I got children who have children. You know, I'm a grandpa. And whatever world that I leave behind for my children, I want it to be a good world. I don't want it to be the mess that it's in right now. And if
I'm
I...
back. Sorry. There
go,
he is.
Go ahead,
There's
Terry.
A loud cricket I had in my mic muted.
Well, glad you're back.
Cricket in the lab this morning.
So what's your thought on the matter, brother?
I'm thinking you're right about the knowledge, and the wisdom is going to be the, I always say it's going to be the new gold. It's really, what is gold? It's a mindset. It's whatever you put your value in, that's the people's gold. It's not a metal, it's an idea. And money, it's only worth anything because people believe it is. Or they labor and turn it from being a worthless piece of paper into some value. But it represents the people's labor. Well, and the people with the most knowledge, you know,
some people
technically have the most gold.
Some people waste away their life trying to fill their pockets, brother. You know, and they miss out on their family and everything.
Now, the one thing I noticed is that the more, like, say, money or whatever you have in your pockets, filling them up, the less room in your pockets you have for the actual valuable things.
Yeah, like the pictures of your kids, man.
Well, think about this, too. If you're out in the middle of the desert doing your thing and you get bit by a snake and you got so much money in your pockets you didn't have room to bring a snake kit. How much value is that? I mean, is that money going to suddenly save you from, you know, the venom in that snake bite?
Well, hey, look on the bright side. At least you got the money to buy a snake kit if you get bit. Do you have the time, though? That's the question.
Yeah, but yeah, if you're too far away from, you know, a place to buy one, then, you know. Again, it comes back to the money is an abstract thought that people have a confidence behind, and that's the only reason that it has any value. I mean, we're probably going to end up being, I mean, I'm expecting that out of all the calamities that everyone keeps presenting, the one that seems the most plausible is we're going to end up in a hyperinflation situation or something, an economic collapse, because people are losing confidence in it. You know, even China has been buying gobs of gold, because basically that's the only funding that everybody has a solid confidence in that's above the dollar. And it's because they're holding tremendous reserves of dollars now, but they don't have any confidence in it. They've lost their confidence in it. That's why they're backing up everything on the gold, so they can basically back their money up with a tangible metal instead of using the, you know, toilet paper with the green back on it that, you know, they've been backing it on.
Well, how do we get everybody to the table? That's the biggest question. How do we get everybody to the table to have the conversations like you, me, and Terry's having right now, you know? Common sense conversations. Because at the end of the day, we're pretty much all under agreement that we see the stupidity of the world. We know that there's a way to fix it all. But getting everybody to the table, that's the trick. You know?
Well, I was going to say, there is a little thing in your book that you keep referencing that kind of points out, I guess, the most important thing to affect that bringing them to the table, as you say, and that's that you can't preach to somebody who has no shoes. You know, when they're running around in the cold, freezing their feet off and, you know, stepping on glass and whatnot, they have no interest in hearing about, right and wrong.
Then maybe our first step is to put some shoes and blankets and clothes and food on to these people, you know? Maybe that should be our ultimate mission, is to try to start...
Remove the basic concerns. Do you have a roof over your head? Do you have food in your belly? Do you have, you know, is it warm where you're at or cool where you're at, so you're not basically suffering, you know? Remove the suffering and remove the potential of suffering, and then maybe they can actually settle down long enough to really think about how the world is going outside their little sphere, you know, and help somebody else.
Well, you know, I wonder if there's a way to combine the whole pay it forward thing to something to where if somebody calls in with need, that we could put that need out there, and then somebody can directly, not to us, but directly to the individual, send them shoes or send them a blanket or pillow or whatever it is that they need, you know. Donations going directly, no middleman, from point A to point B. Hey, you know, there's this individual over here in this country that needs a generator or needs some water or needs something. Is there anybody out there that can help this individual out, you know? I think that the flood of need is out there on the scale of a giant tsunami, and, you know, there would have to be a massive movement towards, you know, meeting all these needs. But I still believe it's possible that we could. You know, I would be more than happy to send something to somebody who needed it. If I got access to it and they need it, I'd send it to them in a heartbeat. So, do you have any ideas of a way that we could actually put some sort of foundation together to where we're not collecting any money, we're not collecting any food, all we're doing is putting people together that can help each other out?
Right. Well, and the people you're talking about are in such dire need, they most likely don't have any way to have access to the internet. That's the problem.
Well, somebody in their country knows that they need help, and so somebody in their country could be a spokesman for that individual, you know, or something. I mean,
yeah, and you're going to have to watch out for those people, like that one guy that came in there and kept, you know, begging for money, and, you know, we offered him other options that would fill the need that he had, but he kept coming back to the money. Like, no, it's got to be money. It's got to be money. It's got to be money.
Yeah, and that's another sad thing, because just like in the alternative energy community, you got shysters out there trying to cheat people, and in the donation community or charity community, you got people trying to cheat people. You always got some shyster out there trying to steal or manipulate somebody's heart into doing something, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a case of wisdom, and you know, making sure that need is a real need before anybody does anything.
See, right. Well, find out what kind of person is behind the need.
Yeah.
Too. Because, I mean, if they're in need, there's a very good possibility that they're in need because they just won't take care of themselves. They won't do anything to fix their situation. Look for people who are basically seeking for a solution that you can provide to get them to where they're basically, you know, more capable of taking care of themselves. I mean, you know, if you got somebody who keeps coming by and going, hey, can I have some fish? Can I have some fish? I'm poor. Can I have some fish?
Give them a fishing pole.
You know, and... Well, no, you don't give them a fishing pole because they'll turn around and give it to somebody else for a fish. You wait for the guy who comes along and says, man, I'm starving, man. If I had some fish or maybe a fishing pole so I could get some fish, man, I'd be doing great. That's the guy you give the fishing pole to.
Yeah.
And you give him a couple fish for the day so that basically he can eat while he's out there fishing, getting himself some more food. And then from then on in, he's taking care of himself. And he's going to, most of these people may not remember what you've done, but if you help 10 people and one of them helps another 10 people, that's still more than enough to everybody gets the help that they need for those that are actually willing to help themselves, you know.
There's, like I said, man, as far as
can't
I
help
can,
people that aren't willing to help themselves. So
as far as I can see in this world, there's so much that needs to be fixed, and it's just such an overwhelming task. And you know, I'm
probably gotta pick a task and focus on it, or it'll totally distract you and ruin your drive and your sense of motivation. That's for sure.
Well, I'm 48, so getting ready to turn 49. You know, and I've had a really eventful life. I've seen a lot of things, some things that no man or woman should ever have to see. You know, I've been down some rough roads and been down some good roads. And my focus has been to get out here and try to at least tempt under King Shaziz the Terrible, a motivation speaker for the world. You know, I'm like, you know, come on, can't we all just get along, peace and love and all that kind of stuff? I'm actually trying to bring my thoughts of what common sense is to the world so that maybe, just maybe, when I throw that positive ripple in the pond, that it goes out and affects enough people who will do exactly what you said, help another 10 people, and so on down the line. But if I remain silent on the whole deal, I essentially feel like I'm complicit in the whole deal, and that I'm not going to do any good by not speaking the words that I'm speaking. And so this is why I do what it is that I do. This is the whole purpose of the Knights of the Round Table, to try to, with what I do have to work with, I got an old XP computer, and I could probably scrape together the money to go buy a better one, and I probably will have to at some point when this one falls apart. But, you know, I'm sitting here on an old raggedy chair in front of an old XP computer, and I'm shouting out to the world some common sense and some peace, hope, and love, trying to bring the world together. This is the best thing I can do with what I've got to work with at the moment, you know. But it's to me, it's better than nothing at all. You know, the fact that I can even do the internet, you know, I'm like, you know, Ken did something on there talking about the top 1%. He said if you're hearing his voice, and you're what he would call the top 1%, somebody who has access to fresh, clean drinking water or something like that. So I should feel truly blessed for everything that I've got, and I do feel that way. But also, at the same sense, I have a feeling of remorse that I'm doing this well, and there's other people out there that's not doing near as well, and I want to reach out, and I want to try to share some of my blessings, even if it's just a word or a smile that will make their day better. I'm trying to give back to the community in the only way that I know how, and that's with the words that are coming out of my mouth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This website, my YouTube, trying to do the alternative energy, you know? That's all I got, Thomas.
Right. Well, you know, that's why I was saying before, though, you got to look at your resources and don't stress over the things that you can't do anything about because you don't have the resources. Be grateful for the things that you are able to do and the things that help you can do so that it'll keep you in a good mind frame so you can keep doing those things. You know, you wear your brain out and your body's going to follow, and then you won't be able to do anybody any good, including yourself, you know.
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the things I sometimes get on, get up in the morning and then look out into the world and think about everything that we just talked about, and it's so overwhelming that sometimes I think, you know, why even bother? Because I don't feel like I'm making enough of a dent in a thing. And then I'll get into the Knights of the Roundtable room here on Skype, and somebody will say something funny that'll cheer me up, you know, or, you know, like the little exchange that we had this morning on there, you know. And I think that my friend Thomas and Terry and Ryan and all them out there, you know, Dieden and Mitko and everybody out there and Steve and Dublin, all, you know, those are my friends that give me the motivation to keep doing what it is I'm doing, you know. And so I'm blessed. You know, I could be sitting here saying, you know, I ain't got no friends. But I do, and I've got friends all over the world, wonderful people who have the same views that they want the world to be better. They, you know, Steve shared a story with me yesterday where he helped out this Chinese lady, and she had a huge smile on her face. She was a real pretty lady and real kind-hearted, and she was down and out, and he helped her out and gave her some good advice and, you know, made her life better. But he's clear across the world trying to do things good for people. We all are. If we could only get that same thing going on in every single nation, you know, get the electricity to people who need it, and water and food and stuff like that.
Right.
I believe it's
possible. That's part of the thing. I mean, you know, they're still calling it virtual labs because that's the first name that somebody gave to the idea that I had of basically having a vetting portal, where basically people can go and see whether something actually works or not.
Yep.
But I mean, we've got some motivation or some movement there too, you know. I mean, even if the people who were initially planning on trying to take that idea that I threw out there in that direction end up wandering off and don't do anything with it, there's still, you know, the rest of us are here and the idea is still here. It's still open for anybody to jump on that and do that. I mean, in fact, hoping that somebody will jump on it and do something about it. If they don't, then, you know, heck, I'll do it. I mean, like I said, at the very least, we've got Google that's completely free, and, you know, you can stream continuously off of that, so. And I wouldn't worry too much about the green screening and the blue screening, you know, arguments and complaints about that. You just do what you can, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's some people that no matter what you present them with, they're never going to believe anything they see because, as far as they're concerned, they already lost, you know? You can't save people from themselves. So, you can only do what you can do, you know.
Well, I think that this conversation today has been, you know, a really good, profound conversation. And we've covered a lot of ground. It's just when folks are out there and they're weeding through the matrix, they have to go in with their eyes wide open and their brain working because, you know, it will literally eat you alive. You know, I sometimes think that the internet is this giant octopus that sucks people in, and if you're not careful, you know, you go down that abyss and never come back. You know, the internet is amazing because the fact that we can talk clear across the planet to each other and meet friends we never met before is a great deal. The research capability is just mind-boggling. And used properly, it could be the most brilliant and valuable tool in your arsenal for making the world a better place. On the other side, you got the dark side of the internet, too, that has everything that we totally despise. And so, while we're
stressed out to the max, if you give it half a chance,
yeah,
or have you thinking that if you just get all your friends to like this picture, it'll save that kid's life? Like, I don't want a doctor doing the work that they can do will be the one that saves their life. You know, if they've got cancer or got, you know, some illness or something like that.
Well, there's a point.
If you really want to help save that child's life, and there is a legitimate need there, liking the picture isn't going to do it. Go ahead and donate some money, you know.
Yeah, act on it. Act on it. Instead of just giving them a thumbs up to tell other people to act on it, put some words down there and some money down there or something to make it happen. Because, you know, you could get a trillion likes on that picture. If that baby don't get the doctor, then, you know, we all know where that goes.
Right. And, I mean, it's just as simple as literally if you have, you know, 100,000 people out there that are aware of what's going on, and they're while they're going about their daily business, and they just, you know, have to spot some change laying on the ground or whatnot, throw that change all together, throw it in, you know, in a big pot, send it off to them to help them. They're not out anything other than just stooping over to pick up that change they saw laying on the street, you know.
Well,
and I mean, it happens all the time. I'm walking back and forth to the store and whatnot, and see dimes and quarters laying on the ground all the time. Was out the other day and found a $5 bill just laying in the grass, you know.
Man, I'm going to hang out with you.
Well, I mean, you know, it's just, again, it's about keeping your eyes open when you're out, you know. Instead of just, you know, blithely going about while your, you know, nose is stuck in your iPhone or your Android and, you know, playing Candy Crush. Instead of, you know, paying attention to what's going on around you and actually taking in what's going on in the world.
Well, I think wisdom, like Terry was talking about, and you had mentioned as well, I think wisdom's going to be the biggest key in making this happen, anything that we're talking about to trying to accomplish, because you got to have the knowledge. You got to get out there and educate yourself. You know, you can't rely on what the government education from the schools out there. You got to know real history. And then there's another issue that I have problems with the internet is the history gets changed from day to day depending on who you ask. You know, I've heard stories of bad guys in history supposedly being good guys and you know, so to try to get a grip on every single subject out there is just impossible. One person can't sort through all this mess to find out who's telling the truth. The only thing you can do is whatever you do have to confront, which is, you know, whatever your interests are that you're wanting to try to make a difference in the world, is to stick with that subject and alone and understand that, you know, there are many, many other things out there that need to be tackled, but you're not Superman or Superwoman. You're not going to be able to do it all by yourself. And that is the advice that I got from you, Thomas, that I had to learn that, hey, I can't hold up the weight of the world by myself. I need other people to do it, and I need to find what my biggest skill is to talk to the world. And that's essentially that, you know, motivational speaker for the world. Hip, come on, you can do it, brother.
Well, if they're not right there with you to help, you know, to actually grab a hold and help them with something, then, you know, what more can you do?
Yep. You can point it out to somebody, look, these folks really need help, and please, if you can do anything to help them out, and then move on to the next one. Maybe keep going back and checking to see that this individual didn't get left behind, you know, stuff like that. It's a job in itself, man. I thought that whenever I retired, you know, that I was going to be, you know, it's going to be all happy-go-lucky and I'm not going to have any work to do. But I'm tell you what, brother, since I retired, I've worked more than I did when I was working. I need to go back and get a job, man. It's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when you got all this time on your hands, you find out that there's so much that needs to be done. You know, you got to fix the house, you got to mow the lawn, you got to take care of your kids, even though your kids are grown up and they have their own kids, you still got to watch out for them. You got to try to address your local community and see if you can do anything for them or whatever. You know, it never ends. So maybe we were all put here to work, I don't know. But for whatever reason, this world has gone bonkers, man. It's drugs, right. Guns, and whatever.
Well, ultimately, though, that's just it. It's not not any of those things. Those are symptoms of the deeper problem. I mean, it's like the thing I was saying about, you know, abusing kids. They talk about kids who are basically beat when they're younger end up growing up to be a certain way, and it's the beating that causes it. No, it's not. It's the parent who's doing the beating because they're being lazy. They don't want to spend time with their kids when they ask why and explain to them why. They don't want to show them, you know, and teach them life lessons. They'd rather just, you know, pound on them so that they'll basically just do what they say to do so they can go back to doing whatever it is they want to do. And these are people who basically don't want to be parents. You know?
I don't know.
Even if they said they did, they still don't want to be, because they wanted all the excitement and the fun of being a parent, but they didn't want the responsibility that comes with it. And if they stop, you know, neglecting and abusing their kids by actually, you know, choosing to be a part of their life and spending time doing things with them and teaching them things, all the problems that they're basically seeing from those abused kids go away, you know?
I don't know if I ever told you this story, Thomas, but whenever I was younger, I was into music, you know. I had some bands that I used to play with back in the day, you know, and play my drums and my guitar and stuff, and got really wrapped up in that as my hobby, you know. My music, it was really important to me. Well, one day I was in the band room, and I was just sitting there, and it was kind of quiet around, and I was thinking, you know, where's my boy at? And so I go off into the other room, and I look inside my kid's room, and there's toys laying all over his floor, you know, and he's sitting there in front of the little Nintendo, and he's got his little thumbs going away, you know. And it never hit me until that day, man. You know, it literally broke my heart when I looked over there and I saw my son. I said, man, this is my son's world. You know, this is what he's got. This is the kind of father I've been for my son, is that his best friend is a Nintendo. I should be out playing ball with this kid. He was only like 5 years old at the time, you know. I always loved my kids. I mean, it wasn't like I didn't love them and I didn't beat up on them or anything like that. But there was a sense of neglect there, because instead of me, you know, playing my drums and guitar, I should have been out there in the yard playing ball with him or something, or had him in there playing music with me, you know. And so, you know, my heart just sunk, and I went over and I picked my boy up and I gave him the biggest hug and I told him I love him. Of course, he thought I was nuts, because he was wanting to go back and play his Nintendo. But Dad just realized that, you know, his son had a world that had nothing to do with Dad. It was just a, you know, a video game that was his best friend. And you know, I'm glad that I realized that, because my relationship with my son from that point on, it was stronger all the way up to this present day. But had I not come to that realization that, you know, my son's world had no part, you know, I had no part in it, you know. It was just, you know, Dad does what Dad does, and kid does what kid does, and, you know, we kind of meet in the middle there somewhere, you know, for dinner or breakfast or whatever, you know, or if we go to the store or something, we're hanging out, but for the most part, who was my little boy, you know? You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad. I am so glad. To me, that was a miracle. You know, it was divine intervention that I walked in there that day and I saw my son, and it came to me that I need to be a better dad than what I was being. So, anyway.
I was
going
to say, you have to wonder how he would have turned out if he hadn't, you know?
Oh, man. I can't even imagine, brother. He graduated from school and he's got a family of his own now, and he's a good dad to his kid, and you know, I just, I'm proud of him, and I'm thankful for that one particular day where, you know, I realized that, you know, I was missing out on something that was so wonderful. You know, like I said, I always loved my children. I got a daughter as well, and I got a stepdaughter, and my uncle's boy that I take care of. I love them all. I love them all the same. I'm going
to
do whatever I can.
I want to know what the song was that you were working on whenever you stopped to go check on him.
I can't even remember.
I was going to say, it wasn't one that has the Cats in the Cradle lyrics to it, is it?
I don't know. I don't remember.
So.
But either way, yeah, that's a profound song there, too. You know? Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that, maybe time to take a music break? Are we getting close?
Yeah, let's do that. I need to refresh my coffee and you guys get you some coffee and we'll be back. I'm going to put on a song, Molly Hatchet Flirting with Disaster, and then a mellow tune after that. So I'm going to bring everybody up and then drop them to the dirt. So,
all right.
I'm going to put on Molly Hatchet Flirting with Disaster because that's kind of what I see the world doing right now. So everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Knights of the Roundtable. We'll be back.
Oh, my life. seize the turbo. All wise routine, seize the turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Knights of the Round Table. We've been joined by Honorable Terry Woodruff. Well, did I say that right? Woodruff. And Thomas. We're talking about all kinds of things out there in the world, and everybody else is talking about all kinds of things, and we're talking about weeding through the matrix and finding out what the truth is and not letting yourself get destroyed by all the information you're being flooded with. But one thing that comes to mind from a conversation we kind of just had there a second ago is that you really got to keep your eyes peeled out there, because there are seriously people out there that don't have your best interest at heart. And these guys at the top, you know, like I said before, they don't care about you, you know. Personally, they don't know you, and maybe if they got to know you, they might care about you to some extent, but the overall agenda is their ultimate goal, and if you don't play into what that agenda is going to need to succeed, then you go by the wayside. And you'll see it with any company or corporation out there that you go work for. You know, as long as you're benefiting the corporation, or you agree with what they say, or whatever, then you know, hey, you're good with the company. You know, you're in like Flynn. There's some other phrase that I was trying to say as well, that you know,
that one works.
Membership has its privileges.
Yeah.
And so, with that said, as long as you don't disagree with them, then all's well. But the moment you do, then watch your back, brother, because, you know, people turn on you like you wouldn't believe. And, you know, if it weren't for guys and gals like us out here that are trying to speak the truth, you know, the best that we can, because we've all had to do our own research and weed through the matrix ourselves and bring the information to the front that we believe is most pertinent to, you know, things that people need to know. You know, maybe some of us are right, maybe some of us are wrong. Maybe all of us are right on part of it, and maybe all of us are wrong on part of it. Because, you know, like I said, we don't know everything there is to know. We can't know everything there is to know. If we did, we would already have this thing situated. But in the meantime, we got to do the best that we can, because there's too much on the line. Like I said, I have grandchildren. You know, the world that I leave behind, I don't want to leave behind the same stressful world that I had to go through myself. I want to leave behind at least a little bit better of a world than what I had to contend with. And if I can do that by keeping the minds open out there to looking to both sides of the story, when you go out to do your elections and stuff like that, go listen to the Democrats and listen to the Republicans and listen to the Libertarians, all the different political groups out there. Listen to them all. Hear what they're saying. Research their background. See what it is that they've done. You know, most generally, people are creatures of habit. If these guys have voted against things that you believe in, then chances are you might not want to pull the lever and say, yeah, I choose you as my representative because you're on the blue team or you're on the red team. No, you pick the guy that is closest to your beliefs, that you think is going to do the best job, and that's the way it should have been all along. And if you find out that your vote isn't counting, that it's all a charade, then work your way towards making it count. Work your way towards getting people into those political parties that will do the representation that they signed on to do. You know, that's the only way to do it. If everyone in the police department is bad, then the whole system's bad. If you start getting good people into the police department, then you have good police officers watching out for the bad ones, and so on and so forth. Same thing with any political group out there, any religious organization, churches, or whatever. You know, you have to have people in there, trustworthy individuals, and, you know, it may be you. You may be the one that needs to go in there and help clean house. You know, if there isn't a... Yeah, I think about the story about Paul Revere. You know, he jumps on the horse and he tells everybody, warns them, hey, the British are coming, the British are coming. You know, Paul Revere and Chicken Little kind of had something in common, and the boy who cried wolf kind of had something in common. They all had something in common. They had the responsibility of what was coming out of their mouth to make sure that that information was true and valid before they ever even shouted it out of their mouth. And with each one of those stories comes another moral of that story. Paul Revere warned everybody the British were coming. And so that was a good deal there, according to history. Chicken Little, he said the sky was falling, you know. And so he got everybody in a panic, and they realized the sky wasn't falling. The boy who cried wolf was out there hollering wolf, wolf, wolf for fun. And everybody would run over to see what was going on. And there wouldn't be no wolf. And then finally he hollers wolf, wolf, wolf when there really was a wolf. And nobody came. And Thomas, I think you pointed this out one time about when they come to get the black man, you didn't say nothing. When they came to get the Jewish man, you didn't say nothing. And finally, it comes down to where when they came to get you, there wasn't nobody there to help you. Mm-hmm. And so, there's a whole lot on that plate right there. That's why I keep saying that your words are so powerful. It's more powerful than you can possibly imagine. What you say has to come out of your mouth with responsibility towards, you know, if you want this world to be a positive world, then you need to put some positive out there, even if you have to talk about the negative, to deliver in a method by which you're saying, look, this is going on, but we can fix it. You see where I'm coming from, brother? Somebody take the wheel because I'm out of breath. I get on these rolls, man.
Well, unfortunately, you kind of exhausted everything, so there isn't really a whole lot that any of us can say without sounding like we're just repeating what you said, you know?
I ate the whole cake.
You ate the whole cake. The whole cake. You ate the whole thing, man.
Sorry, guys.
That's all right. Man. Oh, I guess at this point, it's, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, talk anymore. What's needing to be said has been said. Now we need to start doing, you know?
Yep. And
it's get off the pot time, you know?
I agree. It's get up there and go visit your neighbor kind of day, you know? You go out there and see that your neighbor's all right, you help him out, or you go down and you help that homeless guy, or, you know, you go down to your local charity and say, hey, do you need help sorting clothes or stacking food or whatever? Do you need any kind of assistance? See, there's a thing right there. If people were to get involved in their local communities and actually start being proactive and doing things on a daily basis, and I know there's a lot of people out there who do this, but, you know, my wife, she works up at the Hope Center and does, you know, sorting clothes and getting the store ready and setting up displays and stuff like that and helping out up there. She doesn't get paid for the deal. It's just a volunteer thing. But if more people would get out there and volunteer in their own personal communities, they could find out where the needs are, and they could point those needs out to people who are willing and capable of helping. What do you think?
It's just, like I said, man, it's, you know, it's a constant struggle to get people to even go out and do anything, though, well, because they basically let themselves get run down and drained, you know?
Yeah, but see,
so,
even if it's
pick
a rough
go. Pick something and do it, you know? Pick something and do it, and don't worry about the other stuff that can't be, that you can't get to. Just try to work on that one thing that you can do, and, you know, you got to just trust that at some point somebody's going to pick up the gauntlet on the part of the things you can't do anything about and do their bit, you know?
There's a saying in the health field that if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Such as, you know, if you sit on the couch all the time and you don't use your body and you don't exercise, then whenever you do need to use your body, you just won't be able to do it because you're out of shape or whatever.
You broke it down, yeah.
So even if it hurts like heck to get up and get off the couch and go down to your local community center and help some people out, do it. Suffer through that pain. Push yourself all the way through there knowing that eventually not only is this going to help that person out, but it's going to help you out as well, because now you'll get a little bit of exercise, and every time it's going to get just a little bit easier, make you feel better about your life. You know you're doing something positive for the world. You know, that's the only way to do it. Sometimes you got to suffer
it.
Yourself away from Dancing with the Stars or Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you know? If you want to be a millionaire, get out there and make it happen. This is what this world's
right.
All about. So, you know, I could just I get to saying all these things that should be just flat out common sense, but you know, it in the world that we're living in today, man, there's so much distraction and so much. I feel bad for people because I wish that I could share, you know, all my blessings with everybody on the planet. I wish I could give, you know, I would give everything I had if it would make this world a better place. I would walk around as a homeless man if it would make this world a better place. You know, but it's just so big. But think about the numbers of people out there. The pay it forward thing, you know, that you can't say enough about that. There's millions of people on this planet, billions of people on this planet. If everyone, even if only one out of five of you out there did something good for everyone out there, that's a heck of a step forward, man. That's one big step forward. And as long as we're going forward, we're not going backwards. And we're not sitting idly by. What's your thoughts, guys? Anybody? Has the cricket got anything to say?
You have to come back to that whole, oh, man, this is such a mess. Somebody ought to do something about that. Stop and look in the mirror. You are somebody. You know? Be that one in five, you know. Don't let somebody else steal your opportunity to do something to make a change that will basically, it could very well be the one thing you're remembered for the rest of eternity, you know.
Don't be that guy that walks past a homeless man knowing you got a bunch of money in your pocket and being that guy that tries to justify in his own mind, well, I can't give this guy any money because he's probably just going to go buy drugs with it. Maybe he will. Maybe we'll go buy drugs with it, you know. Maybe we'll go out and buy a big old bottle of liquor, you know. But who are you to judge somebody else out there that may or may not be in need? You know, if you do it without question, look, you know, I got an extra dollar in my pocket. I'll give this guy a dollar, and you know, maybe it'll make his life better. Maybe it won't. But if you don't do nothing.
The lottery ticket. How many lottery tickets have you bought?
You know?
If you're worried about what that guy's going to do with that money, and you know, you don't know if he's going to use it to better his life or if he's going to just go blow it on drugs, as you said, and you know, maybe get sick off of him and whatnot, and you know, feel even worse. Well, you know.
Well, the thing
is, don't spend that money on the lottery ticket then either. Stop spending money on lottery tickets.
If you do something gets done. But if you do nothing, absolutely nothing gets done. It's as simple as that.
It goes back to that, you know, evil happens in this world not because evil people do it, but because good people won't stop them.
Yep, and we need to stand up against evil, man, because the wave of evil is out there. I'm telling you, we need to build dams and ravines and what's those things they call that they put out there to keep floods from. Oh, I can't even remember what the name of those things.
Dikes.
Big old hills on the side of the road there.
It's a dike.
Yeah. We need to...
That's the thing that the you know, boy was basically sticking his finger in to stop it from... in that little parable, yeah. Or that little story.
Terraces. That's the word I was looking for. Something. Anything. Anything to divert that evil away from people, man. You know, send it down into the septic tank where it belongs.
Yeah, guys, you're not allowed to say the word dyke anymore. It's not politically correct. You know, a dyke is a female gay person.
Oh, well...
Don't you know that? So you gotta say terrorism.
Well... Oh, man. Welcome, Dublin. You come in and threw a brick at the wall.
Yeah, exactly. And you're definitely not supposed to put fingers in there, you know.
All right, buddy.
That's too...
Keep her clean.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Oh, man, so how's life on your side of the world there, Dublin?
Oh, life in Spain is good, lovely and sunny and warm, and, you know, but unfortunately winter's coming, so it'll get cooler next month onwards.
So basically don't get too comfortable?
Yeah, exactly. Unless, of course, I decide to emigrate to other parts of the world, like fly south like the birds do.
Are you stocked up on firewood?
That's my plan. I wouldn't say as much chance of that. it costs too much, you know, it's too much effort to change countries. But sometimes I get in that mood and I just suddenly decide the Monday morning I'm changing countries and that's it. Look, I change.
Are you stocked up on firewood?
Who knows? I might go to Australia and go and annoy, what's his name? God, I've forgotten his name. My brain is bad today. Who's lives in Australia again?
Well, we got a lot of friends in Australia. So anyway, what were we talking about? Talking about making the world a better place, talking about sorting through the matrix, we're talking about trying to keep yourself sane and not depressed and doing all that kind of stuff there in the process of making the world a better place. We're talking about getting off the couch and going out and doing things for people as opposed to against people. We're talking about, instead of electing somebody, you have no idea what their past is just because of the team that they're on, whether it be the blue team or the red team, that you actually have some knowledge of this person and their actions. And, you know, the only way you're going to make this world better, the only way you're going to make the system better is to get good people into positions of power in all communities and actually get out there in your communities and address the needs of all the individuals out there in need, to be proactive instead of inactive, or even have to be reactive after the whole thing all blows up and then you have to get up off the couch and do something regardless of whether you like it or not.
Right.
Either way, you know, it does affect you and it does affect the future of all the children of this entire world. And, you know, like I said, I got grandchildren. I want them to be raised in a world better than what we see. I don't want my grandchildren to have to grow up, join the military, go across to some foreign land, kill somebody else's children, or get killed themselves. Why would I want that for my children? You know, there's no honor in death and murder. There just ain't. That no peace ever came from the end of a barrel of a gun, you know, or any bomb. No bomb has ever brought peace. You know, it may have brought a lot of fear that gave temporary peace, but as you see, we still have.
That's not peace. That's inaction.
Yeah.
You manage to stop action. That doesn't mean you stop the mind from working, though. And at some point, if you hold somebody down long enough, they're going to explode.
Yeah, there you go. And there's where the whole terrorist thing come in. What are these guys upset about? Why are they terrorizing people? You know, go back in time and think about over here in the United States when they were protesting against the war in Vietnam. They were running around blowing up stuff. You know, they were trying to get attention by blowing up stuff. Of course, now that was totally counterproductive to peace as far as I'm concerned. You don't go out and blow stuff up just to get peace. You just made the thing worse. Now you not only got a war over there, you got a war over here.
Right. Well, that's the problem, though, is that, like you just said, you know, peace doesn't come from the end of the barrel of a gun. Instead, all it does is it incites more violence. You know?
Yep.
And when it comes to the whole thing about the government too, that's the whole thing in a nutshell is why it's broken, is because it's by violence, it's by force.
Yep.
If you don't pay your taxes, they come and drag you off into a prison and let you get raped and murdered and killed,
or they steal your
just
property
because you wouldn't give them you wouldn't basically give them that toilet paper. You know,
it's kind of like paying the bully for the right to go to school without getting beat up.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And anytime somebody says, well, you ought to be grateful you drive on those roads that they provide.
Ha!
So, yeah, I'm going to tell you what then. If you're okay with that mentality, then I'm going to come and kidnap you. And when I bring food down there, you ought to be grateful that I gave you food.
Yeah.
You ought to actually think I'm the greatest person in the world because I'm feeding you.
And besides that,
let's totally ignore the fact that I'm holding you against your will and not letting you come out of that basement.
Besides that, whenever you're driving down that road and you blow out a tire and bend up a rim because there's a chuck hole a mile and a half wide in the middle of that road, then you can tell me why it is that the government did such a good job on the roads with your tax money. My tax dollars put those chuck holes in that road.
Well, here's the thing, too, though. I mean, if we didn't have them building the roads that they're building today, who's to say what we would be using for transportation now? And I'm sure whatever it is, because need always brings, necessity always brings about invention, we would end up with something that's even better than we than what we have now.
Yep. Four-wheel drives, all-terrain vehicles, man.
Well, or we might be using flying cars already by now, you know?
Or we might even have
teleportation, some sort of, you know, I mean, there's no telling what we'd be doing. Or maybe, just maybe, we would have actually figured out a whole bunch of new ways to use the resources that are right around us so we don't have to have things hauled from clear across the country or half around the world, halfway around the way around the world to get the things that we want.
Yeah.
And most of what would be transported around the world would have just been information via the internet, you know. Maybe the internet would have actually come about a little sooner, you know.
And maybe there'd be a lot more private businesses that would put quality roads out there that, you know, the government has no hand in there. They're earning a living.
Yeah, I was going to say, saying you got to have the government. If you don't have the government, you won't have roads. It's like basically saying, well, then that means that basically there was a government before there was ever any roads or any civilization. Because all civilization started because somebody decided they were tired of living in a tree and they were tired of living in a cave.
Yeah, and they were tired of walking down a mud rut, so they put some bricks down.
Right. Well, I mean, you think about it. I mean, the Romans built roads that lasted. They're still there. Even though they're not used heavily with, you know, trucks and stuff like that, if you had posed the same questions to those people that we are facing now, I can guarantee you there is a massive chance that those roads would last 1,000 years if they built instead of having truck holes and, you know, being ruined within just a few years. We don't build roads to last because we have a forced system. Again, it's at the end of the barrel of a gun that the roads are built, you know?
Yeah.
Violence is used to ensure that those roads get built. And the amount of money that's the resources that are poured into it is of little consequence to the people who are doing the work. Because that violence keeps taking from those people, so they have to keep working. They have to. So that means they build roads that are shoddy and they fall apart so that way they can go out and build more roads so they have more money to pay their taxes.
Yeah, instead of rewarding those who go out and work, you tax those who go out and work.
and you know, think about it. We're gonna you know, punish them for working. Then we're gonna punish them for buying.
Yeah, you tax them.
Then if it's something that we can get our eye on, like a car or a house, we're gonna punish them for owning it each year and not letting it fall into disrepair and disappearing and, you know, not having it anymore.
You tax them for working. You tax them for buying. You tax them for owning property. And when they die, you tax them for that too.
Yep, hit them with a death tax. How dare you die and, you know, inconvenience the government?
Yeah,
can't get any money from you, so we're going to take what's left of your what you have sitting in the bank and not let your kids have it.
Yep. What a world.
So, I mean, you know, again, it comes back to the solution I see is that we put key people into position that have the same ideals that we have, and they infiltrate the you know, the Democrat and the Republican parties, because those are the only ones that are ever really getting elected.
Well, that's the way the Democrats did it.
Well, I would say everybody correlates to basically, you know, be in office by a certain year, and then once everyone that we had planned to have in office is there, and we, you know, we got our checklist to know everybody's going to be voting the same way, we throw down the vote, throw down the gauntlet, say, okay, open transparency. You know, every politician that's in office, anybody who basically holds a public office, your life is now public domain. That means that basically there are video cameras and recording devices broadcasting out to the internet to a cloud that is set up so that it's burning to worms, so that way someone can't monkey with it once it's on that disk. And we do away with the whole taxation system, go with a voluntary donation system that's open and transparent too. That way you know if your neighbor's, you know, out there driving a big, you know, Dually truck and tearing up the roads and whatnot, you know, if he's not donating to help keep the roads up, you know, and people can start, you know, passively taking care of making that guy aware that he has to help, or else he's going to basically be ostracized. You know, hey, you're tearing up the road, I'm helping pay for, so, you know, those those eggs that my chickens are producing, you can't have any. I don't care if you got $10,000, you can't have any, you know. $100,000, nope, sorry, no eggs, you know. Help out with the road, you know. You help out with the road, then, you know, you can get a dozen of them for 50 or 75 cents, like everybody else gets, you know.
Yeah, I seen a cartoon a long time ago about some forest creatures that were running around getting ready for winter time, you know, and one character in this deal, he just kind of monkeyed around all summer long and had a good old time messing with people, and finally when winter time came around, yeah, he didn't have anything prepared, and if it wasn't for the mercy of those who were prepared, he wouldn't have nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a moral in that story somewhere. I just don't know if I can pick it out.
You've been spending too much time having fun and not really preparing, so that's why you can't figure out what the moral of it is.
Yeah, that's it, man. I've been monkeying around too long. But, you know, we go out, we pay for insurance to in case something happens on our house, and in case something happens with our car, or, you know, in case something happens with our health, we pay all this insurance, but we don't pay no intellectual insurance. We don't get no preparedness insurance, so to speak. You know, in case something happens, you got some extra canned goods on your shelves. You know, that should be common sense, you know. You know, if the power grid goes down, having some alternative means of power source or whatever. You know, we in the alternative...
It'd be even better to have a garden out in the backyard.
Yeah, something. Something's better than nothing.
Well, I was going to say, as long as you maintain that garden, the food's always going to be fresh. The stuff that's in that can, in those cans, can still go bad.
Yeah, and then you got to be able to trust whether or not Monsanto was the cook, you know. I wouldn't eat nothing at the Monsanto restaurant. I'd come out of there with three eyeballs, man.
Oh.
Or worse.
I was going to say, you come out of there with cancer. That's pretty much all everybody gets from any kind of monkeying around is cancer, you know.
And if
the immunity system shuts down, and then those cells that are trying their best to find a new way to solve a problem, they go the wrong direction, and no one's around to basically stop them from doing something wrong, you know.
If you're going to go to the grocery store and buy some food, and you look at the food, and there's a section where everything's really super cheap. It's always saved, man. You're gonna save some money. You're gonna come out with extra cash in your pocket. Woohoo! Well, before you go to woohoo in that section, you might want to read the ingredients in what you're buying.
Look up online and find out who's making that stuff.
Yeah. You know, maybe you might want to buy the better brand if it ain't something that's you know, got genetically modified, going to make you grow three eyes and an extra ear or something like that, you know, or cancer.
Well, I was going to say, you know, everybody's like making a big fuss over the fact that Whole Foods is now starting to literally compete with even companies like Walmart when it comes to prices, thinking that's a great thing. I think that's kind of scary, because that means that they're basically stooping to the same levels, most likely, than Walmart and every other, you know, major chain is stooping to keep their prices down. You know?
Well.
What changes did they have to make to lower those prices? That's what I want to know. I don't want to know what the price is until I know exactly why I'm getting the different price, you know?
Well, I would say that networking is one of the things that you talk about all the time, and I would say your best bet would be to go out into the countryside, meet you some farmers, and start networking with other farmers. You know, some farmers have eggs, some farmers have chickens, and some farmers have fruits and vegetables, and network and buy directly from the farmer. You're going to benefit the farmer because he's actually going to be
able to... farmers or start producing whatever you can produce
and
trade with them.
Either way, buy, sell, or trade from the source instead of going through the third party that don't care where it came from. They just only care about the bottom dollar. You know, hey, they don't care if it came from overseas and whether the conditions that they grew them in over there were ideal for safety and health. You know, and they don't care about whether they've been genetically modified. If it looks good on the shelf and it'll last a few weeks on the shelf before somebody buys it, you know, hey, it's all about the money, man. If you think that the guy that owns Walmart cares about your health and safety, he might come out there on TV and say that for public relations. But does he really, you know, does he really care about the kid who made the shirt that you're buying? or does he care about the food that's going to go in your belly? You know, whether or not you're going to be feeding this to your children? You know, are there pesticides in this stuff? Did he go around and do the research? Did he have his employees actually research it to find out that this is the most quality stuff you can get? I would rather go to a store where I had to pay just a hair bit more to that store for the comfort knowing that my food would be safe to eat and not pesticide filled or genetically modified or whatever. So
you eat better, you have more energy. You have more energy, you can get more work done and get more resources, regardless of how you're getting them. Whether you're producing something, you're trading, or you're working for the man, basically getting that green toilet paper.
So network with the farmer. You know,
right?
Go out there and find the manufacturer of the toilet paper. Buy it from them direct. You know, make sure that they're not putting bad things in it.
Actually, that's not a bad idea, especially if you're networking. You got all those farmers you're networking with. Everybody throws some money down, and you go on a big pot and buy enough of that toilet paper from that manufacturer, and then distribute it amongst yourselves instead of going through some company that's going to do the distribution for you and then charge you for it.
Start yourself a community distribution group where you all pitch in to get certain items on the list, and then and even going in as far as investing in a warehouse to store it in and distribute it amongst all the members of the community there that are members of it, whatever. But either
way, you'd be surprised how fast you end up with a lot of excess resources that you you never had before.
Yeah.
I would say the same thing would apply to gas too. If you're really worried about trying to solve some problems with the gas prices and whatnot, get together as a group and go ahead and go buy an old shut down gas station that still has serviceable tanks. If you don't have one in the area, then get one that doesn't have serviceable tanks and fix those tanks, and run a credit community based oil state or a gas station.
Yeah.
Where basically the community pays for the fuel, and then you just come along, whatever you paid for to own the chunk of that fuel is on a card, and you just swipe it on there, and it deducts some of your gallons you bought. And then that way you're buying it, at the distribution price,
Yep. That's the best way to do it. I mean, the only alternative is to do the system that we're doing right now. We see how good that works. So I don't know, man. It's a whole lot to contemplate, but it's just a matter of, like I said, if you're sitting on the couch and you've been sitting on that couch for years and you're just now getting around to deciding that you need to get out there and do something, it's going to be painful at first. You're going to have to force yourself to be motivated. But if you don't force yourself to be motivated, the world you leave behind for your grandchildren, that's it. It's as simple as that.
Well, we're on a slope that it's not even going to... Those who don't care about the kids, they've got to worry about at least themselves, because it's just going to continue to get worse, and, their last days are going to be some of the worst they've ever had,
Yeah.
Because it's literally getting that much worse that quickly, And it keeps accelerating. It's an exponential growth of a vile, selfish, destructiveness that we're facing right now.
Well, how far can things deteriorate before they're completely rotten, man? I mean, we're heading down the path. If you can't see it, you're blind, or you're just not paying attention.
I was going to say, that Agenda 21 thing, I don't think they're going to succeed at doing that. I think if they push through to try to cull the herd, as they say, what they're going to end up doing is they're going to make the world completely inhospitable for all humans, and there won't be any humans left.
Well, I think
that 500,000 will end up disappearing with all the rest of them.
I think what they're hoping, I think because of their arrogance, I think what they're hoping is that they can ride it out in their little bunkers and safe zones, and everything will be just fine. The rest of the world will be at war and killing each other, and then they'll come out after it's all said and done, when everything's cleaned up, and start a new world. But even in that new world, they're going to have kids that are going to be born that's not going to agree with the system, and the whole entire deal will begin to repeat itself over again. How many people can you have? How many people can you kill off in the new world order that because they don't agree with you, you go ahead and execute them or whatever? you're going to make more enemies, and it'll just repeat itself over and over again. What they should have done if they wanted to make this world a better place was to use some real true enlightenment and understand that the path that they're sending the world down, the ends do not justify the means. You can't kill somebody to get something good. That's all there is to it. You know, you may think, well, if we get rid of all the guns, there won't be no more crime. Well, if you look back in the book that I keep reference to, the first murder was done with a rock. You know?
Yeah, I was going to say, you can't basically, unless you cut people's arms and legs off, there's no way you can stop people from hurting each other.
Yeah, so we all going to sit around.
Banning things ain't going to work.
We all going to sit around in our straight jackets and look at each other?
I was going to say, you got to dig into the root of the problem, which is a psychological problem. You know, the problem is in the mind. And they keep dishing out and doling out the problem every day. When kids go to school, they're getting it from their school. You know, you've got principals that are saying it's okay for boys to be rapists. Well, like, no, it's not, you know. And it's not in their genes to be that way, you know.
As far as I can see, when you get people, you start telling the little girls that they have to look like the girl that's on TV, the airbrushed beauty that's on TV, and if she looks any less than that, or not wearing the same clothes and all that kind of stuff, or better clothes, then they're lesser of a person.
Or if she dresses a certain way and she gets raped and she asked for it.
Yeah.
That's to be expected, that, you know, that you, no matter what you do, there's, you know, if you dress a certain way, it's just going to happen because that's the way people are. Then you're basically conditioning those people to, you know, to, you tell somebody that they're stupid long enough, they're going to believe it, and suddenly they're going to have trouble learning. You know? Yeah. Stop telling them that they have these problems and, you know, creating problems out of nothing.
Everybody likes an exciting movie, you know, but a lot of the things that goes on in Hollywood and in movies in general is basically a glorification of violence, you know. You know, the good guy versus the bad guy. We're going to war. We're going to kill the bad guy, you know. There's a whole lot of killing going on. A whole lot of wars and rape and destruction and looting and pillaging. And, you know, everybody wants to see this exciting movie, you know. Did you ever see the movie Road Warrior? Post-apocalyptic scenario where everybody's running around. Ooh. Man, that's what I see coming to the world. That scenario, like, there was one called something Dome or something like that.
Thunderdome.
Thunderdome. Thunderdome and Road Warrior, and there's actually been a few other movies out there like that. That is the future of humanity. After all heck breaks loose and all society has collapsed completely, and you're all...
Yeah, I don't see that. I have a feeling it's going to be much worse. Instead of Thunderdome, it's going to be Thunder Chicken and the Road Dummy, you know?
Well,
it's going to be some mesh of the Road Warrior and the movie Idiocracy that we're going to be facing.
Well, if it's any worse than that movie, I don't want no part of it. I want to be able to go from point A to point B without worrying about some street gang coming along to mug me for my gasoline or whatever.
Well, you've seen the movie Idiocracy? Do yourself a favor and look that up. It's meant to be a comedy, but, I mean, it's one of the most horrific movies you ever watch, because it's actually about as close to the truth as what we're facing. I mean, basically, the just to give you a general premise, is that this guy is cryo-frozen and wakes up in the future, right? And the future's facing a massive food crisis. And it's because basically throughout history, while he was frozen, the stupid people didn't care, weren't thinking about the consequences of their actions, so they just had as many kids as they want, while the smart people were, you know, like, oh God, I got to make sure I have enough money and everything else. So you ended up with almost no smart people being born, and all these dumb people just keep being bred. And, you know, I mean, obviously it's not a genetic thing, but if you keep teaching people to be stupid, eventually you're not going to have any teachers to teach people to be smart.
Yep.
And to use critical thinking. So you're going to end up with all these people where critical thinking and common sense is going to be completely gone.
Well,
I mean, it won't even be a word in the vocabulary. And then you're going to have people who are just, you know, following a game plan that was set by corporations, which is what they have in there, their food crisis, is because they're watering their food with Gatorade, their equivalent of Gatorade, you know? It's a whole, well, you know, it's got electrolytes, you know? It's what a plant wants. It's like, stop watering with that. He tells them to start watering with water, and they're like, what? Like from a toilet? Yuck, you know? That's the mentality they've developed in that story, and that's kind of what I see happening at some point, is it's going to be like a cross between that and that Mad Max world, because nobody's going to wake up one day and say, hey, you got to switch and start using the water. They aren't going to be around.
Well, you know? Prime example of what you were talking about is there's kids actually graduating from school that can't even read. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it's politically correct to No Child Left Behind, you're gonna pass a kid and give him a high school diploma and he can't even read when he goes out to...
Well, hold on. It's actually a combination of two things, okay? It's not just that they're worried about basically making sure everybody gets through. It's that they're making sure that everybody gets through with the amount of money that they are willing to spend, because they don't want to take the time and spend a little more money for those kids that need the extra help so that they can be on level where they can basically do, you know, they can survive when they get out in the world. They don't care. That's the public school system for you. Again, it's a system provided to people at the end of a barrel of a gun.
Well,
either you give us that money so we can build this school the way we want to build it, or we're going to shoot you in the face and blow your head off. We're going to come by afterwards with the sheriff's department, and we're just going to throw your kids and your wife out in the street, and we're going to take that house from them, and we're going to auction it off to anybody who's got money so we can go build that school and make that school work the way we want it to work. I mean, that's what they're facing. I mean, I don't care how they say it when you hear them talking about what they're going to, oh, it's going to be so great, la, la, la. No, you got to realize that the voice inside the head of the person that's there is, gimme, gimme, gimme. You give that to me right now. I'm the government, and you owe it to me, you know, or I'm going to beat you over the head with my club.
Well, their method...
That's what we're facing.
Their method isn't working, because when that kid goes out there to apply for a job and he can't read the application or fill it out, if you go to an employer and say, can you read this application for me and write down my answers, that employer's not going to hire you. And then now, okay, well, we got a job problem. Our people can't get a job. Well, that's because you cheated them out of an education. They can't get a job. So...
I want to say, if they wanted the Agenda 21 to work, the fastest way they could reduce the population is through education. You teach children from the day they're born until the day that they're ready to leave that school system to critically think, and by the time they walk out that door, they're going to be fully aware of what having kids will do to their future, and many of them won't even have kids. They'll choose not to. They'll look around, they'll see all their friends, say, okay, well, you know, that guy, Johnny, had you know, two kids. You know, my friend Ben had, and his family had, you know, six kids. There's more than enough to go around. I don't need to contribute kids. I can work and keep all my money to do what I need to do.
Yep.
And you will see a massive reduction in the population very quickly just because of that alone. I mean, they'll probably end up with a situation where there'll be so few people being born, they'll have to start paying people to have kids. We need more kids. Just have some kids, you know? Nobody's having kids anymore. They're all smart enough to know better than to just, you know, go out and just pop a bunch of them out, you know?
Yep.
But here's the thing. The kids who are born will be getting a quality life because the parents took the time to really know what they're getting into, what they're doing, and prepared themselves to really provide for those kids. And well, they've already critically thought it through, where basically, look, you know, this kid isn't alive. I haven't had this kid, so they can't sign some contract. Therefore, when they come into this world, they don't owe me anything. If anything, I owe them, because I brought them into this world without asking their permission, because they weren't here to ask. You know?
Yeah.
So they'll get the you know, the value in life that they really deserve as they're being brought up, you know?
It sure
and
is.
Instead of you know, seriously diminishing the population to the, you know, the infinitesimal amount they're talking about, the 500,000 people, we'll maybe see a reduction by half within the next, like, two or three generations, but the people that are left behind will actually take care of the resources they have. They won't need to reduce down to such a small amount. The only reason they want to reduce the population down to 500,000 people or whatever it is that they're talking about, if these people are actually pulling this nonsense, is because they don't want to stop being wasteful. You know?
Yeah.
If all the people in the world would just stop being so wasteful, there's more than enough to go around, even for five times as many people as we have right now.
Well, that's what I'm saying. A lot of the land is already locked up into government control. You can't even go there without permission or you're trespassing, you know? The whole world should be free. There's 3/4 of the earth is covered in water, for Pete's sake. I mean, it's not like we're going to run out of water. And, you know, they are so fearing about, oh, well, it takes nature so long to make fresh water. That's a hockahooey, man. Go over to Dubai, man. They got huge desalination plants, and they make plenty of water. They're not dying over there. But the whole thing is, it's not that we don't have resources. It's that people want to control them. That's the key right there. It's control of everything. If you drop the population down that far,
be wasteful.
Yeah,
they want to be wasteful. They want to basically be as lazy as they can possibly be and be as wasteful as they want, and know that there's still plenty left over because nobody else is there to use it.
But how
they want to kill people so that they can eat their cake and they can have yours too.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing, man. How are they going to depopulate the world as many people on here now? You know, they're going to vaccinate us to death. They're going to uneducate us to death. They're going to get us in wars to death. You know, these folks that want this major population, they're not stepping up and saying, look, for the sake of all humanity, me and my family is going to commit suicide so that the world is not populated. And for those of you who love humanity, you should follow us as well. I wouldn't ask them to do that, but I'm just saying they want to choose somebody else to be depopulated, but they're not offering to depopulate themselves. They're trying to put all right. their things into place so that when it all falls down,
then they'll be the ones left behind.
Yeah.
Right? And they'll get, like I said, they'll get to have everybody else's cake too. I was going to say that scenario you just proposed previous to the reality of the situation is exactly what they pointed out in, there's a British show called Utopia, where they're basically, you know, a group of people that are battling an Agenda 21 type situation, and when they show way back in the past when the whole thing started, one of the key founding members of the organization is trying to work on this system to depopulate the Earth. When she first hears about it, about the problem that, you know, sparks the idea to run this thing, and she says, well, what can we do? What can we do? And the guy's like, I don't know. I mean, I really have no idea. Nobody wants to listen to my answers anyway, and, you know, so it's never going to happen. She's like, well, fine. She jumps up on the table next to a railing, is about to jump off the railing, kill herself.
Man.
I'll go first, you know?
Did you ever see the movie Logan's Run?
Oh, man. I don't remember a whole lot about it because it was so long ago.
Well,
but
that
I do remember
movie
that had a lot to do with euthanizing people.
Yeah, that movie, as old as it is, if you haven't never seen the movie Logan's Run, go watch that movie. Essentially, to put it down in the short version, is that when you become 30 years of age, you get on this huge carousel on your birthday, and they basically spin you around in circles, and then lasers shoot you and they kill you. So you get to live till you're 30. You got this little bitty light thing that's in the palm of your hand, and whenever it goes off, then that means you're 30 years old, and then you get to go to your great reward, so to speak. Basically, you get whacked, and then
right. There
were a couple
Logan
of individuals.
Logan is basically, I guess, 30 or something like that. So he's, you know, that's his whole deal, is he's basically trying to avoid that happening to him.
Yeah, two of them
and
escaped.
I think trying to change.
Two of them escaped out into the real world because they said outside of this place that you couldn't live out there anymore, and that was how they kept everybody in there to when they turned 30, you know, for the better of all the community, they kill you, and then I'm not going to tell the whole story because I'll run the movie for you.
Well, I would say if people aren't willing to watch that show because it's too old, they can't hold their attention span to it, there's another show that came out not too long ago that has an almost identical concept behind it, and the other thing is that it actually looks, the cityscape in this new show looks an awful lot like the Venus Project's ideology and what they want their places to look like. Yep. So,
hey, looks like Muddy joined us. What's up, brother?
Oh, nothing much. But wasn't that actor 37 years old when he did that movie?
The Logan's Run? Probably.
Yeah. He looks a little older than 30 to me.
But either way, that's what the concept was. At 30 years old, you get whacked, and the only people that are alive are 30 and under, or 29 and under. That would be a nasty birthday present on your 30th birthday, man.
I've got the story. So I mean, the movie, if people want to go hunt it down, it's called The Giver.
Boom.
It that movie I was talking about that's similar to Logan's Run is called The Giver. And if you need to, you can look up the guy who plays the guy who the main guy, both the bad guy and the good guy for the new Tron. It's the same actor. So,
well, either way, man, it's a terrifying thought that humanity would think about even doing stuff like that, man. I mean, like I said, this planet that we're on is an amazing. It's a thermoelectric generator of epic proportions. It's a self-contained biosphere, and it has 3/4 covered in water, more than enough resources for everything. And you think,
well, we have a bigger nuclear reactor than anything we could put on Earth, and it's at a safe distance where we can safely get power from it and use it on a continuous basis too.
So, you know, why don't we just tap into those geysers for steam and run generators off of them, you know? Why not? Why not use systems to tap into lightning? I mean, all over the planet, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, there's lightning in the sky. Let's tap into that. Let's tap into radiant energy and everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no energy crisis. There's just a lack of common sense. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking for it because we're surrounded in it, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say we don't have a free energy or have an energy crisis, as you said. We have a common sense crisis,
yeah,
critical thinking crisis. So,
you know, there's all kinds of alternative energy research going on out there. This guy show you how to make every kind of generator under the sun, and Terry's working on solar exciters, and Ryan from Abrams Lab doing the same thing. They're finding amazing things with those. I'm working in plasma technology, and all these things combined could make it an awesome generator. But even without all that, just paying attention to nature itself. When's the last time you got a bill from the wind or the sun or the earth or the water, you know? It's just, to me, if you ain't back in the alternative energy community, then you're just back in the system, because every time you put a dollar in the electric man's pocket, you just make him that much more powerful.
Well, actually, you have to realize, too, every time you put a dollar in the hands of the energy providers, they're all funneling back to the oil industry. So if you got a problem with the oil industry, then you have a problem with the electric industry. You know,
yep.
You have a problem with the food industry. I mean,
same thing.
Because they're all tied together, you know.
And when people in this world start to get more powerful because they got more oil, guess what? These guys got enough power and connections to get wars started. And they literally do. Some of them are in, got both feet.
Or initiate an agenda.
Yep. Some folks have both feet on both sides of the war zone. I'm going to give this guy over here guns. I'm going to give that guy over there guns. I'm going to make a lot of money and step back and watch these guys duke it out. And when it's all said and done, I'm going to send my construction companies in here to rebuild it, and then we can do it all over again.
Yep. Wasting resources
the
whole time, too.
I'm sorry, Thomas. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just saying they were wasting resources the whole time. That's the reason why they're feeling the need to reduce the population, because they keep wasting all these resources.
Yeah, people leave the AC on in one room and the heater on in the other room. Got the lights going all doggone night. I mean, used to be when you got electricity, it was great because you could turn a light on at night and find your way to the bathroom. Because the house, they leave the house dark. No, people leave lights on outside, inside, a million wall warts on the wall.
Well, here's the thing, though. All the waste of the entire world that you're talking about, every single person is wasting that stuff for the next 10 years. will not waste anywhere near the amount of resources that one day of war wastes.
Right. Yeah, 2 days of war would have put wind power and solar across the United States enough to take care of our needs, so they're not really concerned about that. Mm-hmm. Before we jump off, Laser Saber had a video out about atmospheric electricity and ionic electricity, and using the graphene to collect the electricity on the sheets and everything, and he also went and visited a research facility that invited him.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they've got quite a few acres. They got some like 200 foot poles up there with a wire going out in the square. It looked like you could fit probably about 30 homes wide between the poles, you know, due to the picture from way up in the air. And yeah, I mean, they had 2 centimeters of electricity coming off a wire only in the air. So, I mean, that's pretty sharp there.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, that's the thing, too, is that I don't see the graphene collection being, you know, the key point. The key point is that it not only does it collect energy and transfers it, but you can get a thin enough layer, you can actually make it transparent. So instead of a wire, they could be filling that whole square with a giant sheet of something that has has lines of that graphene running through it to collect that power.
That two centimeter gap wasn't going spark, 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 spark. I mean, it was constant, like several streams of it, and basically the plasma of it, the whole thing was basically about a quarter inch thick continuously. So I mean, they were bleeding off a lot. You put that graphene up there. Oh my goodness.
Well,
yeah,
just
hanging sheets of graphene from that wire all the way the full length. I'm pretty sure they have a hard time handling it.
Well, I was gonna say you don't want to hang it. You want to stretch it across. That way, the wind can blow under it and over it, and it's not gonna catch it. You know.
That's why I say hang it underneath. Hang it under the wire, and it'll float out. You know. Yeah.
Right. So
you don't need a bunch of wind resistance.
The key.
For sure.
The key in this
but
whole
when
thing.
The wind does blow across, it'll collect more. Anyway, right? Go. I'm sorry. She says.
The key in this whole thing is that the energy is there. I mean, if we're ever to get anywhere, if you want clean, renewable energy, then you just got to rethink on how you're actually delivering that to the inefficient appliances you're wanting to run with it. I mean, it's there. The atmospheric group that you're talking about, they're pulling 2,000 volts out of the sky, man. So that's a lot of juice. Look at all the wires that we got stretched all over the entire world, you know, for delivering our electricity.
And it's up there pretty far,
yeah,
too.
And you watch down at the pole, you hear that, especially before and after a light storm, because they're draining all of that off, because it's not their frequency. They could be tapping that. And also, yeah, that facility was thinking about making it, developing it into a power electric company for the local area. Oh, good news as well. Boomer is now licensed Boomtown Power and Light. That's ready to go. He's getting up a whole bunch of solar panels. He's working with if you ever seen Wally Minto's Wonder Wheel, he's doing a deal with propane. He's got straight water pipe between two propane tanks and playing with that. And I think he's going to put about 6 or 7 bars all the way across when he's done. He's hoping to develop at least 4 horsepower.
Well, where there's a will, there is definitely a way. And so if we're ever going to beat the system that is the beast that's eating the humanity alive, it's going to take guys and gals like us with common sense to get out there and just do it, man. Don't ask for permission. Just get out there and build it, period. And if they're hollering about you having solar panels in your yard, then hide them. Hide them in your pool. Something. Come on, man.
Yeah. Anyway, to the ceiling fan that I rewound with 18-gauge wire, because they had, 30-gauge wire on, anywhere from 24 to 30-gauge wire on a ceiling fan, 3 turns per coil. And you got two full sets of coils, plural. And basically, I couldn't probably, I think I got 15 to 20 turns per coil as best I could do with the 18 gauge. We slapped that sucker together yesterday with some one inch, not yesterday, a few days ago, with one inch by half inch by half inch neodymium magnets. And man, when we first cranked that thing, I got video afterward, and I think one of the test leads was bad or something, but we got 24 volts, and we were looking at 2.4 amps just with a hand spin.
Wow.
Not bad.
Hey, if it works, it works. I'm just saying, you know, if we've said this a million times, if all heck broke loose, what you got in your pocket is what you got, and that's what you get to deal with, so you got to think about it. You know, I'm not a doomsday prepper per se, but I do believe in having some sort of insurance going on. And if you ever want to get out of the system that we're at, it's going to be as simple as backing the people that you believe in and helping them, you know. It's not going to happen via the system. The system's working fine for the folks that's up at the top. They're getting rich. They got you fighting. They got you sending your kids overseas to fight. They got you being poisoned. You're being drugged. You're being dumbed down. And, you know, what benefit are you getting out of this whole deal besides a miserable life? You know, putting fluoride and chlorine and all kinds of crud in your water supposedly to benefit you? Really? Come on, man. You're getting your foods jacked up. Your prices are jacked up. Everything's jacked up. The gas prices.
Yeah, jacked up prices on jacked up food.
Yeah. So, come on. The only way that we, the people, are going to make this world better is if you do like Thomas said and go out in your yard and put a garden out there. You know? Get out there and help your neighbors. Get out there and back somebody, you know. Get out there and volunteer some time. Get out there and do something, anything. Get on the radio. Join Shaziz Radio Network and become a host and have your own show talking common sense. You know, every once in a while, I got to breathe. But that's going
to
cost me, too.
Subject matter so wide, I just wanted to get the updates in there.
Oh, no, that's great, brother. That's what the table's about.
Right. Thomas, weren't you working on trying to get the graphene sheets?
I've got some stuff here that I'm working on. At some point, I'm kind of sidetracked right now because life is getting in the way, but as soon as that gets done and winter fully sets in, I'm going to get back into that. I got a container for free from Asbury and of what they call vein graphite as a sample. And they give you, if you ask them for a sample, they'll basically just send you a 2.5 pound tub of this stuff, you know.
Wow.
And this is the stuff that if you throw it onto a magnet, it'll actually, if you get a big enough piece of it, you throw it onto a neodymium magnet, it'll actually float over.
Cool.
It's that order.
Wow.
So essentially what happens is the carbon that's in the ground comes into extreme pressure and a release is given somewhere so that it bubbles up as a liquid due to that pressure and that heat, and then cools as it reaches a higher level in the ground, and then you end up with basically a vein of this stuff that's just an igneous form of graphite. So it's about
from
as pure
Asbury.
Asbury, yeah. Was it? Let me grab a container real quick. So I'll read off the name real quick. Anybody who needs the link, you can send it out to them. I'll give you the information too.
I'm thinking those steels that my wife loads newspapers in. You're talking about a smaller container?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a sample. You can buy 5 gallon buckets of this stuff. Asbury. And then they have carbons as part of the name of the company, so that way you know exactly what you're looking for if you Google that up. But like I said, the important thing is it's got to be the vein graphite. So that's what you're looking for. That is the stuff that Robert Murray Smith was working with that he made the little floating materials and made the sheets by grinding up into a powder and then pressing it together to make a solid sheet. I've done a few tests with it already. The best thing that I found was putting it into a press without grinding it or anything. Just put it in the press and squeeze it until it forms a flat sheet, because it'll reform and make a flat sheet. And then just take a real light coat of a clear paint of some sort and let it soak into what spaces are still available for it to get into, to kind of lock it all together so that it's not flimsy or crumbly. And, you know, you can use it as a diamagnetic material. It'll float over any magnet you throw it over.
Wow. Well, you know, I keep saying this, that the perfect scenario in my mind would be to get some sort of centralized lab for everybody to come to and actually build these things and do the research that we're talking about. You know, I know that's a tall order to ask, but, you know, if we can at least start with virtual labs and get that up and running and work our way towards, I don't know, selling some mugs or something like that, T-shirts or something to get some funds to keep a lab like that functioning, or even build it to begin with. Any step forward in the alternative energy community that's going to literally put these things in people's hands, as opposed to putting them on the shelf so that some corporation can sell their fossil fuels. You know, if you got thousands of gallons of oil, you don't want nobody selling something that you know, is going to take away from your money that you're going to make off your oil. You want to sell all that oil, you know, to make as much money as you got. So it's in your best interest
exactly.
to suppress.
Kind of like Thomas Edison didn't want Nikola Tesla to go to three phase because he already had his his single phase system in.
The DC power.
Going from AC, he already had the DC system in line, and anything to prove Nikola Tesla wrong, even though he was right, was okay with him.
Yeah, and he literally went to the extremes of torturing animals, you know, electrocuting them to try to prove that it was dangerous. AC current was dangerous, you know?
And that backfired on him. Cause yep. Nikola Tesla, he just went up there himself and touched it, says, see?
the whole great. Key is, if you think that there's people out there who aren't trying to do everything under the sun to hold on to their grip of coal or fuel or any oil or any of those industries out there in the energy community, if you think they ain't trying to hold on to their businesses at any cost, such as buying up any kind of alternative energy devices so they can shelve them, you know, then you're sadly mistaken. That's been going on since the industrial industry ever even started, and it's going to continue to go on, and the only way you're going to get that information is to put it out there freely. So, you know, that's what you got to contend with, man. It's a real deal.
It goes back even farther than that, with farmers and corporations rerouting the water that went through the farms and stuff just so they could buy the land cheap, you know?
Greed,
it goes,
man.
Much farther.
Greed. Agenda 21. Greed. That's the only thing I see with it.
Greed.
You know? Greed. I want my cake. I want your cake. I want everybody's cake. And, you know, I don't care what happens to you.
Yeah, I want everybody's cake, so even if I got to walk around and stick my finger in every one of them so that nobody will want their cake, that's what I'll do then.
Yep.
Whatever they have to do, you know.
So, you know, for society...
Well, the URL, greed.com, is actually taken.
You know...
We could do something with that.
There's this... So much insanity to that whole Agenda 21 thing. It's just mind-boggling why anybody would think that it would be in anybody's best interest to begin murdering people and depopulating the planet. It's just mind-boggling. What if you got the world down to, let's say, what was it, 500,000 or 500 million, whatever the number was they wanted? If you got the population down there, what if there was a massive plague that went on and just wiped out all of humanity? Now you ain't got no population.
Yeah, it'd be cool to get a be cool to get a sample of that Ebola and beef it up for after they kill us. Well, and there's only 500,000 left, and unleash it on them.
Well, you ever hear little kids running around?
I don't know about cool. I don't think that'd be the term I'd be applying.
You ever hear the little kids running around with that little term they call psych? You know, like, well, they'll come up to act like we're going to shake your hand, and then right before you put your hand out there, they yank it away and go, psych, you know. Well, what we need to do is let them think their plan is succeeding, and whenever they get ready to start the World War III thing or the doomsday scenario, and they all run down into their bunkers, we all run over there real quick and pour some quick concrete over the top of their bunker and say, psych! You know, I don't know. Then they're locked down.
You're right, it wasn't cool. It was just the idea of what happens after they get rid of the rest of it, and it's only 500,000. What happens if all these things they create come back to bite them in the butt?
And they will. Karma has a way of coming back on them.
I was going to say, if it's a genetically modified organism, the one thing we know for certain from watching all the experiments that have been done is that once you start tinkering with that DNA, it takes a long time for it to settle down.
You know what would be perfect karma? What would be perfect karma is if after they killed off the entire population and they all come out of their bunkers, now there's these genetically modified freaking giant spiders and nasty looking bugs like you see in the sci-fi movies that are terrorizing them through the rest of their life. Hey, you created the monster, live with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, what I'm seeing happening is, they'll modify, if they went that route, they'll modify something and they'll make a vaccination for themselves. They'll watch the rest of the world die, and then through the billions of people that bug is running through, it's going to change, and when it comes back, they won't have the people they need to make a vaccination or the time, and it'll end up wiping them out, too, and then we'll be left with no humans on Earth at all. Might even be so bad that it ends up wiping out most of the potential bipeds that we have here, like, you know, the chimpanzees and the gorillas and whatnot too. You know,
well,
they'll get their giant parkland that they were deserving. There just won't be anyone to, you know, to enjoy it.
So what if we've came to this point in history, and many people, many civilizations before us have also came to this same point in history, to where now we're at a crossroad. We have a choice as humans to decide to either head on down the path to sure destruction, or to become enlightened and start doing things the right way and survive as a race. Otherwise, just like many civilizations that may or may not have been before us, completely collapsed and wipe out all of humanity, and it restarts itself all over again. It's kind of like that deal. If Pete and Repeat's on a boat and Pete falls out, who'll be left? You know? That'll drive you nuts. Especially when you get your kids saying it, because they won't stop.
Yeah.
But if we're going to continue to repeat the mistakes of the past, then we're going to continue on the same road that we're on into the future. I don't want to see us go down that road, because what I see in the future isn't good. And I don't want my children or my grandchildren or their children's children or whatever. I'd like to see something good left behind. You know, I'd like to put some sort of positive influence to where they look back at our generation and say, that generation was a generation of doers. They didn't just sit there and talk about it, but they got up and did something. And so for the world that we live in, we thank them for their efforts. You know, like all the fallen soldiers in the history of time who thought they were fighting for freedom and justice. They sacrificed something, you know, they sacrificed their lives to go out there and give us the opportunity to speak freely and live in freedom. And yet there are those out there who are willing to try to steal that away, which is, to me, totally dishonoring all the people before us who paved the road to try to build us the better future. They're stealing it. They're stealing everything in this world from everybody in this world, regardless of how many people suffered and sacrificed to get us to this point. We're now at the crossroads where we, the people, have the opportunity to become educated and to look out into the world, find the problems that need to be addressed, and get up and do it. If we don't, then I'll see you down the road when we're in the road warrior mentality, and You know, hopefully you're a friend and not a foe, and we don't have to do battle out there in the apocalyptic world. Hopefully we can see eye to eye, and instead of repeating the past, get out there and garden together and share and barter and trade and just live life and love and that kind of stuff. That's my mentality. What do you guys think? Crickets.
Spot time. Spot time. You put everybody on the spot. We froze.
I think don't everybody talk at once.
Yeah. Yeah, don't jump to the microphone at once. You might chip a tooth. But anyway, we're down to the last 10 minutes, guys. So, you know, if you got some profound thoughts, now'd be the time to get them all in order so we can get them out there. Who wants to go first?
Okay, so we stick this you stick this wire up, and it's coated with graphene, and it kind of looks like a big old fly swatter net, and it's put horizontal over a square mile. And then we put the Tesla coil under it. And we line a bunch of fluorescent lights around it. Okay, now when the graphene catches all the atmospheric electricity, pumps it in, and makes a huge spark gap enough to kick this doggone big Tesla coil going, to light up all these lights, and the electricity sparks and arcs are going back up to the graphene, and I say, you know, that might be pretty recyclable.
Yep, that's free energy.
Don't need much to get it all going.
That's free energy, and it is doable.
My final thoughts here.
Yeah, you can light up a whole square mile. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Thomas.
Oh, well, I think we only got like 9 minutes left.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so I'm just going to say my last piece. I'm starting a little, you know, side adventure, kind of like the Mad Science After Hour thing that I initially talked to you about, Muddy, before it got sidetracked by somebody else. We're going to do this thing on Tuesday nights, get together and have, you know, have a little discussion called Tesla Tuesdays, so.
Sounds good. Well, about what time?
Not sure. I started a Facebook page, and, you know, I'll toss some links out there. That way people can find it, and they can throw their two cents into the pot as to, you know, when they want to do things. We can, I mean, people can get together and have more than one. Obviously, it's not like, you know, we're going to be... We're the be-all, end-all, and only person who can do it. Anybody can do it, but, you know, just want to, somebody's got to get up and get going. Like you were saying before, Shiziz, you know, we got to stand up and start moving.
And I'm in it to win it, so I'm with you guys.
I'm still pushing to do the after-hours thing. I just won't be able to, it's going to be a few more weeks before I can finally get everything set up to do what I'm going to do, but you know, when it's finally live, I'll let everybody know for
cool.
that and for the Tesla Tuesdays thing. In the meantime, you know, just look us up on Facebook, and I'll give you guys a link here in a bit. You can post that in the chat and whatnot. Anybody wants to join in there, you know, the talk is probably going to actually be on Google Hangouts for now because we haven't found anything better. So
yeah,
for recording.
Gene Autry. Gene Autry said, buy land, they aren't making any more of it.
Yeah.
I say, buy ways to make your electricity, because they're making plenty of it, but when they take yours away, you won't be able to get it then, unless you've already done it. Do your work now. Get your stuff together. Get your free energy up.
There is plenty of space that isn't being used for land that can be built. You know, more land can be built. So, you know, that's one of the projects we're still looking at. You know, it might be a viable thing at some point. We have the money for it.
Go out there and gather all them water bottles that are floating around and build an island.
Yep.
Got an idea for you.
There's tons of plastic.
Kansas, due to the tornadoes and so much of it, there's plenty of towns there willing to give away free land.
Just be prepared to build
to add to the add to the
yeah.
They really want you to have a company or some interest in making that bringing money in. Research facility there wouldn't be all that hard to do. What do you think?
That's good stuff. You guys always save the best stuff for the end of the show, right when we're running down on the wire there. So
always happens.
Write it down and save it for the next one. Dublin, you got anything, brother? Dublin, turn your microphone on. Going
Harry.
Once? Going twice? Dublin? All right,
well. Eric,
go ahead, Terry.
About the these free energy experiments that everyone's doing, I've seen a lot of them, and I know that people could make their own batteries, like Muddy's been describing, and everything. This is the thing that people need to concentrate on, because every time we pay our electric bill, we're feeding the very system that enslaves us. Yeah. And that goes the other way with the food. Everything we buy that makes these Monsantos and other companies profit, that's what feeds the system that is destroying us. We have to stop. Just stop feeding the system. Speak with your dollars while they're still worth anything.
That's exactly what needs to be said.
People are
going
to take a wheelbarrow to the grocery store to get some groceries, and the dollars will just be falling out, and they won't care. It'll be like the Weimar Republic. And this has happened, and people don't know about it. They don't know the history and how the world works.
Right.
Be cutting through the matrix, like Shaziz's been saying all this time.
I would say do your research and look up the Zimbabwe dollar and look at the history of what's going on there. You'll find out what hyperinflation does quick there.
That's the whole key, and we're down to it. So with that said, thanks to everybody out there for the Knights of the Round Table in Dublin. I don't know where you went, brother, but peace and love to you. And, you know, like Terry has got to say, and we've all said, if you keep feeding the beast, it's going to continue to eat you alive. You know, you may think it's your best friend, and, you know, you got to have the beast around to protect you. But the fact of the matter is, if you look at history, history shows a track record of the beast not protecting anybody. We're kind of like the sheep standing out there on the edge of the cave and saying, you might not want to go up in that cave, because even though the wolf has invited you for dinner, he hasn't told you that you're probably on the menu. And so common sense dictates you're going to have to start preparing for yourself, and you're going to have to start taking care of your neighbors. You're going to have to start practicing common sense and peace and love if you want that for your world, and you want that for your future of all generations. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. Peace and love, everybody. Stay tuned.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma, which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur.
That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
Oh, but if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about! Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot.
Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance whenever we're able. We do routines and call the scenes with footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-able. The many times we give and rhyme that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
On second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Turbo and the Knights of the Round Table.